it is recording. To pause, short break.
My name is Cindy, and my surname is Chikunga. And to the DG of Home Affairs, I'm definitely not your problem. I am in South Africa. And I am married to a South African. So I'm not a problem, and don't look at me and say, there, yes, it's another problem. I just want to take this opportunity to welcome members of parliament from committees, including the Portfolio Committee on Police, Portfolio Committee on Preserves, Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs, a Standing Committee on Finance, and of course, the Standing Committee on Intelligence. Probably they might be members from the Portfolio Committee on Public Works. We also will want to take this opportunity to appreciate and welcome the following departments led by the SARS. And talking about SARS, I thought I was going to mention SARS last because they just deducted my money. However, it was legitimate, but money is money. However, they are leading the delegation of these departments, Department of Police, Department of Defense, and Military Reserve, Department of Home Affairs, State Security Agency, and of course, Public Health. We are indeed aware that there are other departments that play important roles in the border schools and borderline schools. But we decided that for today's meeting, we will only meet the departments that are primary role players. We have received some apologies from members who some will be joining us later because of flight. However, I think it is important that we highlight the purpose of this meeting, which we believe that in the main is to get clarity in terms of roles and functions, clarity in terms of budget and finances, clarity in terms of resources that include human resources, IT resources, material resources, of course, it's mentioned, but clarity in terms of accountability, clarity in terms of time frames for actions that must be taken or have been taken, and of course, mostly clarity in terms of coordination between the relevant departments and agencies tasked with regulating the movement of goods and people across the borders of the Republic of South Africa. This clarity will also include the roles and functions of the Border Control Operational Coordinating Committee, BOCC, and of course, of the Border Management Agency. We do believe that by the time we close this meeting, we will have paved way forward, which will also ensure that even as Parliament, our overseeing of these departmental entities is indeed coordinated. fellow committees that have managed to visit border posts and border lines agree just on one thing, and that is the alcohol epidemic. This is one other matter that talks to the security of the country which we are discussing today. We believe that as members of parliament, as South Africa, we have to know at any given time and given moment as to who is in the country and what is in the country, when, why, and for how long is that person or group will be in the country. And the question is, do we know for sure as to who is in South Africa today and what is entering South Africa today? I just want to mention the fact that we will be meeting in this house from now up to the 11th hour. This simply means that we only have 3 hours, 30 minutes for us to interact on this very important subject. This simply also means that we will therefore allocate time to the departments that are going to make a presentation before this meeting. We are aware that the leader of the delegation is Commissioner Obama Khashoggi. We will therefore allocate at least 1 hour, 30 minutes for you to finish all presentations. After that, we will then take questions from members and we will allocate time for that. And then, of course, we'll allow you to respond to questions. Our own view is that when we close this meeting, we must be able to say from here, where do we go? I've introduced myself. We will request that as different presenters or delegations make their presentations, they introduce their delegation so that we save on time. Otherwise, members, when they ask questions, they will also introduce themselves and the portfolio committees to which they belong, and then we continue. I think it is important to allow participants get to appreciate their presence in the meeting here, but also allow them to introduce themselves, and then we hand over to Commissioner Makashi.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Meggie Mahoney, a member of the Portfolio Committee of Mandela.
Good morning, and honorable chairpersons and members of the combined committee. Thank you very much for the opportunity to greet you today on the work that government departments and agencies that are represented here today are doing, both jointly and individually, in respect of both the borderline and the border post security. Chair, if you allow me, with me today, let me introduce to honorable members the role player at the South African border. The Department of Home Affairs, with delegation today, is led by the Director General, Mr. Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, who's on my left. The South African police service, whose delegation is led by Lieutenant General Elias Mawela, who's sitting on the left somewhere. The South African National Defense Force, honorable members, is led by the Deputy Chief of Joint Operations, Major General Ephraim Parker. And of course, the South African Revenue Service, which I'm privileged to lead today. Then also somewhere, sitting somewhere is Mr. Marie Michel, the Chief Executive of the Financial Intelligence Center. In addition, honorable members, to these primary agencies that I mentioned, our borders will not function effectively without the support and cooperation of the Department of Public Works, which is today represented by the acting Deputy Director General, Mr. Peter Chiapasco, who is sitting right at the end there. The Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, which is represented by the Director of Inspection Services, Mr. Mwikisi Ramaphosa. And the National Treasury, the people that provide us with the funds to do our job, and the border post is represented by the Director General of Governance and Administration, Mr. George Tembo, and the Director for Defense and Military Veteran Portfolio, Mr. Peter Pantosi. Honorable members, also we have with us Mr. William Pierre, who currently chairs the Border Control Operation Coordinating Committee, DCOCC, who is sitting behind me. Honorable members, each of these government departments and agencies perform quite unique roles in addressing the various aspects of the borderline and the border food security and efficiency. As part of today's presentation, each of them will brief you on the work that they are doing in line with their particular legislative mandate. I hope the committee members will understand the logistics involved in coordinating the presentations of six government departments, which led to us only sending it out late on Friday. And for that, we really wish to apologize. It was quite a juggling act trying to get the six departments in one room, although we had structured the coordinators. But to agree on the content of the presentation was quite a challenge, and we profusely chair and apologize for having brought the presentation late on Friday to you. But before we get to the presentation, permit me to provide some context here on our order and to brief the committee on how we as government departments are working together in collaboration to enhance our effectiveness. Honorable members, to put the borders into context, it is useful to provide a view of the scale of the challenge we face in our vast country, and I emphasize the word vast, in providing an effective border security response. South Africa is a vast country. It has 4,800 kilometers of land border. Botswana, the Botswana border is 1,840 kilometers long. The Namibian border is 967 kilometers long. The Lesotho border, remember we surround Lesotho completely. The Lesotho border is 909 kilometers long. The Mozambique border is 410 kilometers long. And here the Zimbabwean border is 225 kilometers long. I see here they didn't mention the Swazi border, but it is also quite a long border. Our point of entry compromised 730 registered airports and landing strips. There are 10 international airports, 53 land border posts, And one other thing that we always forget is seven rail crossings. There are 8 commercial seaports, but more importantly, there are 11 non-commercial harbors and 92 other small harbors dotted around our coastline. 2 further entry points also exist, which pose serious security threats. One is post that come into our country, and the other is cyberspace. On the people's side, in 2010, 11.6 million foreigners traveled to South Africa. 5.1 million were South African residents arrived in South Africa, while 9.9 million foreign travelers and 5.2 million South African residents departed during the same year. That is a total, Honorable Chair, of almost 32 million movements of people into and out of South Africa in one financial year. The bulk of foreign travelers, honorable members, arrived by a road. Around 8.3 million of those arrived by a road, with the remainder by air, around 3.2 million. There are more than 50 airlines making around 230,000 aircraft landings and carrying about 33 million passengers a year, which move through the 10 principal airports that we have, international airports that we have. By far, Johannesburg ORT is Africa's busiest airport, with about 8.81 million departing passengers and 8.78 million arriving passengers. As far as goods are concerned, Chair, last year we passed an enormous figure of 1.5 trillion worth of goods that moved through the South African border this year. As you know, Chair, from a tax point of view, the revenue from a tax point of view, if you have to compare this with it, is 674 billion. So this is almost twice the amount of revenue that goes through our country. So we do have a lot of goods that go through our borders. At our busiest road border post, and I'm giving that this figure so that we can contextualize the scale of the challenges that we are facing as a country. At our busiest road border post, 160,000 trucks move through by bridge post, and a further 60,000 move through the Bombo. That is an average of over 600 trucks a day at these two border posts alone. At Bybridge, that equates to an average of 20 trucks per hour, 24 hours a day. Or if you have to reduce it to minutes or 24 hours a day operation, it's one truck every 3 minutes. In terms of sea cargo, Chair, the Port of Durban is South Africa's main cargo, general cargo and container port, and it handles a huge 31.4 million tons of cargo, more than 50 billion each year. Approximately 44% of South Africa's break bulk cargo and 61% of all containerized cargo flows through Durban. At an average of 83,000 containers a month, which are handled at the Durban Container Terminal, which is the largest port in the Southern Hemisphere. Yesterday, Chair, I had a meeting with the Chief Executive of Transnet, who I asked to make sure that the National Port Authority actually joins the coordinating structure on the border, particularly when it comes to goods safety, which he has agreed to do and appointed security chiefs to come to our meeting. So, honorable members, the men and women whose job it is to safeguard our borders also operate operate under some of the most extreme conditions, 365 days, 24 hours a day. Just to give you a feel of the conditions under which our people work, honorable members. In the peak of summer, temperatures soar well above 40 degrees along our western and northern and northeastern borders. In winter, the temperatures plummet to well below freezing and are blanketed in snow along our borders to Swaziland and Lesotho. And we know, of course, that around our coastline, we have some of the roughest and most notorious unpredictable seas around the world. So, honorable members, the work of this official is as wide and varied as the threat from which they must protect our African people. These threats include threats from people who cross into South Africa carrying a multitude of illegal, unwanted, harmful items from guns to grass to disease. We are facing threats from illegal immigrants who come seeking a better life. But in so doing, they pose, honorable members, a threat to our own ambition for job creation and a better life for our own people. They are threats from animal and plant products which can really wreak havoc in our agricultural industry and in our environment. We also face threats of terrorism and international crime, and the appropriate agencies will talk some of the issues that we are facing. We also, of course, face threats from dumped and undervalued products in direct competition to our own industry, which provides jobs and economic growth. We have lots of dumping which undermines our own industry. So what are the challenges, honorable members, that we are facing? South Africa faces significant challenges in securing our borders from these and other threats. These challenges are extremely pressing and require ongoing attention. These challenges span our aviation, land force, border lines, ports of entry, and the maritime area. Our borderline fences and the defense who are responsible for the borderline will talk to them. Our fences are vulnerable. Radar coverage of our airspace is insufficient. And our vast maritime border, I mentioned that we have 92 landing harbors around, not just around our maritime port. This vast maritime border is under patrol. The lack of available resources, the spread of corruption, vulnerable transit facilities, poor security management by contracted private security companies at port of entry, and non-adherence to legislation all contribute to insufficient detection and deterrence of this threat. So, as coordinating agencies, we're pretty aware of the enormous challenges facing us. The departments represented here today are all acutely aware of these challenges and will set out in the course of our presentations today the actions we are taking to better address this challenge. But it is important to understand that South Africa is not alone in grappling with this challenge and how best to address it. We just need to look at some programs on border security agencies that are showing a presence in the Discovery Channel to see that these problems are universal and the solutions are equally complex, and we want to plead with honorable members to please understand that the solutions to our border challenges are really complex and sometimes are elusive even to the wealthy and well-developed nations. challenges we face as South African border cannot be viewed in isolation from the broader socio-economic and political issues facing us in our region and in the world. The challenge of illegal immigrants, for example, is a symptom of regional inequality and instability, and a long-term cost-effective and desirable solution is not to build higher, wider, and more internal global centers, but to address the root cause to regional economic growth and stability. Equally important is that borderline and border post security requires collaborators and combined responses by the various government agencies at work in this area. And for that, we hope we will be able to answer quite effectively the question that we have posed in your beginning when it comes to demonstrating that we have a coordinated response to the challenges that we are facing. At each port of entry, immigration procedures are required for human traffic and customs procedures are carried out for goods traffic. Each of these procedures require a carefully balancing of the needs of security and the facilitation of the movement of goods and people. The prevention of illicit movement of goods and people is carried out jointly by the Department of Home Affairs, the South African Revenue Service, and the South African Police Service, with critical input from the State Security Agency. At the same time, the movement of both people and goods needs to ensure that our agriculture and our people are protected from harmful diseases that may be carried out over the border, that may be carried over our borders. In order to effectively channel and control the movement of goods and people, the borderline must be protected and secure. The chart in the presentation earlier, the chart that you see over there, shows the role of various departments within the border processes. As you can see, the process flow at the border typically involves a series of interdependent agency processes and a number of hand-offs from one department to the other. Recognizing that cooperation and collaboration are very essential for the efficient and effective management of our borders, our government has initiated a number of responses in recent years to enhance cooperation and integration of our functions. Chair, following the National Crime Prevention Strategy in 1996, the National Interdepartmental Structure, the NIST, in 1997 to 2001, was formed. The Border Control Operations Coordinating Committee, the BCOCC, which is here over, was set up in 2005, and initially under the National Joint Operations and Intelligence Structure, the NIST joint, but subsequently was set up to be independent of the NIST joint in order to coordinate the interrelated border functions. The BCOCC chair has up to now been the main mechanism of port of entry coordination. And you mentioned this in the opening remarks also, Honorable Chair. At the same time, operational activity undertaken in relation to border continues to be coordinated through the network. Honorable members, the enhancement of South African border security has been identified by our government as a key strategic priority to enhance the safety and security of our country and its citizens, as well as to protect the local economy and boost economic growth and job creation. The establishment of the Border Management Agency to give greater effect to alignment or coordination still remains a key priority for government. And as you know, the Cabinet last year mandated the National Intelligence Coordinating Committee, NICOC, to pursue this initiative. Work is continuing under NICOC to establish the DNA and in the delivery agreement of the JCPS cluster. We expect the DNA to be established by 2014. In the interim, cooperation between the various agencies with a view to improving both the borderline and the border post security is not standing still. The inter-agency clearing forum, which you will hear a lot about around numbers today, is an informal structure established in early 2010 as a multi-agency coordination and cooperation committee to expedite and facilitate during that time the implementation of the border security enhancement measures. Most notably, if the memory serves you well, you remember that it was to deliver the FIFA guarantees in respect of movement of goods and people before and during the 2010 FIFA World Cup. The IATF at that time comprised the various agencies involved in border protection and security, including the Department of Home Affairs, Public Works, Justice and Constitutional Development, International Relations and Cooperation, the South African National Defense Force, the South African Police Service, the South African Revenue Service, and the State Security Agency. Those were the agencies that were involved in the early days of the IATF. The primary focus, honorable members, of the IATF was to coordinate and facilitate the urgent implementation of an enhanced movement control system, which we call the EMCS, on behalf of the Department of Home Affairs, ahead of the 2010 FIFA World Cup. And the EMCS formed part of the guarantees that we provided, as I mentioned, to FIFA and South Africa, and provided for a world-class movement control system, which was able to accurately identify people entering and leaving the Republic of South Africa to instantly screen such individuals according to continuous updated data provided by a range of domestic and international agencies, including CERS, SSA, Interpol, and FIFA themselves. This project, and I'm indulging myself, Chair, in explaining to you, because it's really the basis of the coordination that we are going to try and articulate today, Chair. This project has been hugely successful, and since its implementation, Honorable Chair, the EMCS system has processed over 50 million movements since the World Cup. A second key project that was given impetus by the IATF is the one-stop border post between South Africa and Mozambique. At Lebombo, and from the Mozambique side, the border is called the Refano Kashia, which, when fully implemented, will enhance the clearance of people and goods to significantly reduce congestion at the border post by moving the clearance of goods away from the border as it stands at the moment to new facilities 7 kilometers inside South Africa and 4 kilometers inside Mozambique. So goods and people will be cleared before they actually reach the border post. This project will see immigration, customs, security officials from both countries operating together to facilitate a smoother, faster, and more secure flow of people and goods through this important border post. Achieving this requires international agreements and legislation amendments which are currently being considered by Parliament. But perhaps more importantly, Chair, the success of the IATF has been in giving birth to a new collaborative spirit between various involved agencies. And we hope that our presence here at the United Front will bear testimony to the fact that we have found a way of collaborating. In fact, the IATF has grown since the World Cup, honorable members, to include the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, the IATF, which is chaired by my colleague on my left here, the DG of Home Affairs, provides us with a platform which the various agencies can jointly address both ad hoc and long-term border security issues with a view of improving the efficiency and effectiveness of individual department responses, as well as a combined effort to improve security as an interim measure ahead of the establishment of the BMA. proposal by the JCP, as Director General Cluster Committee, concerning the formalization of the structure, the IEPF, and on addition, strengthening of existing structure, facilities, and mandates of the various departments and agencies has been submitted to Cabinet for consideration. And Cabinet has not as yet applied themselves yet to the proposal. Preparation for today's presentation, Chair, between this department was coordinated at this structure. So what is our plan for today, Chair? An honorable member, with that overview that I hope I've been able to provide in the introduction, allow me to hand over now to individual representatives from the various departments to provide a more detailed overview of their mandate, the challenges that they face, and key achievements at the border post. And I hope they have all heard you, Honorable Chair, when you say you want timelines. And I hope they will update when are they going to implement some of the responses in terms of timelines. In terms of the proposed sequence, Chair, the Department of Home Affairs, the DG, Chair, he can talk longer than me, so please call him to order. He will begin by addressing the immigration challenges that we face. I will come back, Chair, and talk about what we have observed for customs, then hand over to the South African Police Service, which will be followed by the General from SANDF. The Department of Public Works Chair will come back to explain why I'm not getting the facilities we pray for. And the National Treasurer will finally give you and the Honorable Member an idea of how much money we are spending on the border post. Regrettably, Chair, as I mentioned, the state security agencies could not come here because they do their presentation at the joint intelligence committee. Over to you, Egypt. Thank you very much, Chair.
Yes, Chair, we were given 10 minutes to cut this
But I was asking him that is sort of kind of immigration question. And just saying, how are we managing immigration? Now, we are responsible for port control, permitting, asylum seeker management, inspectorate, and foreign office coordination deals with the visa issuance outside the country. And then we are performing this function over 70 ports of entry and 200 regional and district offices and 120 foreign missions. Check, without going back to this map, but this map was indicating how many ports do we have and what are the issues around the airports, what are the issues around the land borders, what are the issues around transfrontier congestion areas and rail borders. But the biggest challenge for us is the large number of private airstrips which nobody is looking after. So that's what this map was saying. Chair, what has been the paradigm shift in terms of management of immigration? Pre-1994 era, it was a controlled, selective and Russian-based immigration regime characterized by secured borders. Foreign African migrants regarded as units of cheap labor and not as potential immigration. Then after 1994-2010, it was really a liberal immigration regime characterized by weak border system combined with a laissez-faire application of international protocols and constitutional prescriptions, where people just come in front of our border lines, as long as they are claiming an asylum seeker, then that person enters into the country, no claiming nothing. Then beyond 2010, what is the vision now? Is a managed immigration regime characterized by controlled borders that are secured through a risk-based processes, systems, and security-conscious officials. When people were talking about that, why are we going to defer to recruit as a Home Affairs? Are we militarizing Home Affairs or not? But we are addressing that particular issue. Immigration policies and practices informed by national security. That is the underlying point. And development imperatives, international commitments, and constitutional systems. So this is a high-level problem statement, I think, the commissioner touched on that because of time, I'm going to go back to it. But what is important here is that managing immigration requires the active and informed involvement of all state and civil society stakeholders. That's why currently we're working with the ISDS, because if we work in isolation or individual, we won't achieve anything. So here we're trying to show what are the important departments which needs to operate in a collaborative way in the border post and as well as other departments like education, health, labor, traditional leaders, and cultural leaders. Mm-hmm. So, this just to demonstrate what, in terms of the issues which we have, if we make that an example as Mr. X, then Mr. X is moving from all of Africa or Asia and is seeking opportunities. The first thing that person does, pay a smuggling certificate and get a visa or a ticket to a neighboring country. Then from there, he either pays a bribe in the border or jump a border and get picked up and taken to a safe house. Immediately after that, that person goes and applies for an asylum seeker. Then once you got that asylum seeker, which at the moment is what we call the Section 22, which allows that person to work or to study. Then he gets in and runs a small shop, which is linked to illicit economy and CBK. Then once the asylum seeker has been rejected, then that person gets into a fraudulent marriage or buys an identity or fathers a child. We've got cases where a person says, yes, we want to put a child with somebody in South Africa, therefore I qualify to be a citizen of this country. Then, after that, then that person now then applies for a permanent residence. And then it divorces that wife, and then it brings the real wife, and that person is a citizen of this country. It's how we're talking about this laissez-faire
liberal immigration which we had, which at times, once we were to try to say, people start to misinterpret and say we're being homophobic and all that. But this is the question we're talking about. But what is the impact of that into the sexuality issue? False identity, using good processes and rituals, poor and uncoordinated data on how, why, where, and Mr. X is. In South Africa, now, we don't require addresses. If you took your ID 10 years ago, the address which is in our system is not one of 10 years ago, because there's no law which compels people to give the address. Then this leads to poor monitoring and enforcement by several departments and spheres of government. I was reading a paper yesterday saying that police is arresting people around the cinema. And I think that is false. But those people are in our country illegally. That this gets exploited policies and laws and processes of federal of government. But the major impact is on the economy and the security. Now we are talking that our small businesses, if you go to our rural areas, go to those small towns, yes, the shop is still written Emma Benin trading store. But who is inside that shop? And we're not registered with the businesses. What we need to deal with it. So that's the issue that we're dealing with. What is the solution? Chair, what we're saying is that we need an immigration and identity at the heart of any security system. We need to have these systems which are integrated. And we're saying that system must be able to link DSA, SNPF, SAF, state security agents, justice, and as well as the economic cluster, sub-Greek and communities. Today, the minister is launching a project between ourselves and the bank, whereby now, if you go to the bank, you take your ID, and then you use your fingerprint to check whether this person is the rightful owner of this ID, which will cap a lot of stuff. So I say the objective is the state security and public safety. Chair, what is the approach which we are looking at? I'm looking at my time and I'm left with a minute. But we are looking at a situation where we're saying we need a system which must start outside the border of South Africa. That's why now we're talking about the APP and Advanced Passenger Processing System. Before you board that plane, we must be able to check you and say you can board or you cannot board. After that, we must have our airline licensing officers, which was put in various countries, to check and link with our call center in South Africa. Then we come to the land border. That's why we're talking about that movement control system, which must link with all the databases of Interpol, police, and so when we get a hit, it must immediately report to police that this person was illicit. And then we are controlling the border in that fashion. As said, we had the issue of undocumented immigration around the borders. As we know, our history. Okay. Yes. So, around the border, which we are talking about, as you said, what is our history? As you know, that those borders are really borders, some of them, it's just a line which is cutting across the community. A chief is sitting on the other side, but the people of that chief is on our side. So they don't put borders like that. Which now is an issue which wanted to look at it, which is communities which are sitting around the borders, which cause the issue of fraudulent entry into our national population. In fact, it is on record that our neighboring countries are coming to South Africa two times a month. The first day is to come and collect a grant and a child grant. The second time is to come and collect money from the RDP homeless. So we had to do this survey in order for us to inform us what we need to do. But what we have picked it up is that over the past 4 decades, there's been an increase in the foreign population in settling in our area. That is a fact. And that increase is between 1999 and 2010. And 80% of those individuals are illegal in the country, and 43% are unemployed. So what we've done, we've implemented an advanced passenger processing system, which we know how it works during the World Cup. We implemented this movement control system, which has already been touched, which is helping us as the agencies. And also, we're looking at capacitating our process industry. That's why there's this relationship which was created with Defence. We've got now 350 recruits, which are recruited from Defence. They're under training. By the 16th of December, they will be taking over at over Tango and implemented some. So what we're saying is that if we're going to go and get people on the street who do not have the security consciousness, we know who have that. So that's why we've got this relationship with Defence. Amendment in our act, the important part section of that amendment is the one itself. If you have come to South Africa as a visitor, now you want to change your status, you want to work, go back to your country. And thereafter you apply. And then we look at why do you want to come to South Africa. Do you meet what benefit are going to get by you coming in here? So those are the things which are implementing. So these were the areas of collaboration which we have, but in particular with SARS, we are working together, say, in issues of fraud in the department. The arrests which we are able to clean is because of the collaboration which we have with SARS together with our intelligence agencies. And then SNDF have already put what we are doing together. SARS, we are busy with the implementation of system in order to address the issue. So, Chair, that's what in 10 minutes at that we are saying is what as the Department of Home Affairs we are doing, and we are saying we can only win that battle if we work together as the department. Thanks.
Thank you very much, DG. I will be as quick as the DG Chair, coming back to talk about customs. From that point of view, Chair, I've already mentioned the mandate of SARS, which is twofold, Chair. And I'll do an abridged of the notes that I was going to use to talk to Chair. I've cancelled a lot of stuff that I was going to say to try and save time. Our mandate at customs, honourable members, is twofold. One is to facilitate trade and to protect our country from unwanted and harmful products. These two objectives require a very delicate balance, Honourable Chair, between service and enforcement. Too great an emphasis on speeding up the movement of goods in and out of South Africa will leave our markets obviously open and our people vulnerable to unwanted and harmful products. On the other hand, obviously too great an emphasis on enforcement will slow down and stifle trade, which is the lifeblood of our economy, undermining our economic growth and job creation. It takes between, Chair, to give you an idea, between 15 minutes and 5 hours to search a truck effectively, depending on what that particular truck is carrying and how it is loaded. Of nearly 450 trucks a day that are processed through Bybridge, you can start to imagine what will happen if we start conducting detailed searches for each and every of the trucks. The queue of trucks, Chair, will very quickly extend to many kilometers. The other day in Zimbabwe, they introduced a new custom system, and we had a big gridlock of exports coming from our country to Zimbabwe, and we had queues blocking up to 75 kilometers from Bybridge up to Messina. So you can see if you really start to introduce systems without planning and understanding these things, you can actually gridlock the economy. We had a situation where the Zimbabwean Minister of Finance phoned us to say, are we trying to impose sanctions on Zimbabwe? And it was actually the Zimbabweans that were implementing a new system that was slowing down clearance from their side of the border. We are painfully aware, Chair, that we have not always got this balance right, most especially within the customs environment. Every drug which corrupts our youth and which has its origins outside our borders is a reminder that the safety net we and other agencies of state provide have failed to protect our people. every counterfeit product on sale on our street corners and every illicit cigarette. And that's a big problem, Chair. It's an indictment on our ambition of protecting our local economy. So what are the challenges that you are facing, Chair? You have heard that, you know, we handle goods of up to 1.5 trillion rand of imports and exports into our country. Last year we handled, Chair, 1.4 million export transactions and 2.2 million import transactions, you know, which is done through about 500,000 importers and exporters. While we have all these things, Chair, you can understand you can't do them manually. So they have to be done electronically, and that's our strategy. The problem is compounded by the complexity of international and domestic trade rules and the large number of different technology platforms that are in use, not only internationally, but within South Africa also. Within such our legacy systems, which we have had 39 different legacy systems managing various aspects of movements of goods. So there's a graph here that will show you, I think they took it out, where we are trying to modernize the system where we are moving from 39 standalone systems into one system that would be able to efficiently control our goods. Quite simply, Chair, these systems and related processes were not designed to handle the kind of volumes and trade that we are currently having at the present moment. Nor was it expected to have done that in the last decade or so. So that's the first challenge that we are facing. We have systems that don't match this kind of volumes that you are dealing with at the present moment. A paper-based manual system is not only inefficient, Chair, as you might imagine, but it's also highly vulnerable to fraud and corruption. So paper can easily be forged, custom release stamps can be stolen, as it has happened, and still happening in those areas where we still use custom stamps, and misuse and paper is easily lost and stolen and so on, Chair. And it's easy to cover your tracks if you are manually based. So the most important, Chair, our response is to make sure that we balance service and enforcement through understanding the risks that are involved in all the processes. So the way we as SARS and other customs authorities around the world are attempting to ensure that the rapid movement of legitimate goods is by utilizing sophisticated risk assessment tools which can identify how risk goes, how low-risk goods can be allowed to move relatively unimpeded, while pinpointing high-risk goods to be subjected to more stringent verification checks. We have developed what we call the Customs Risk Engine, which has been redesigned to such an extent that it enables more precise risk targeting and selection, thus driving better operational efficiency and output. This precision, Chair, has enabled our declarations to be controlled by this risk engine, ensuring that cargo that are stopped for inspection is more likely, or we have a higher, greater chance that they are non-compliant. This reduces time and resources and inefficiencies, and we are now, you know, employing our best resources legitimately. A further aspect of this modernization, Chair, is a re-engineered and more robust inspection process. Importantly, this contributes significantly in the fight against corruption, in that inspectors are no longer allowed to select cases they work on. Instead, in line with our reforms that we have done on the tech side, on the custom side, now we use the what we call the get next item, which is a concept which Home Affairs also is implementing, which identifies cases and then allocates those cases to people at a random basis, rather than allowing a space for collaboration and corruption to take place. Chair, during the past financial year, just to give you some example of the benefits that we have had by introducing the customs risk engine, we have been able to have 20,000 seizures of seizing of goods with a projected value of almost 1 billion rand. Included in this success, Chair, is almost 100 million rand worth of contraband cigarettes that was seized in the last financial year. Almost 1 million counterfeit CDs and DVDs were done through, you know, better understanding of risk and risky goods. over 2 tons of hard drugs were taken off our streets by SARS and in joint operation of the police, particularly. Over 750,000 pieces of underdeclared or illegal clothing confiscated, which was worth 483. And this morning, Chair, I got an SMS that we had a very successful operation again against cigarettes in collaboration with the police, where we seized an unbelievable amount of illegal cigarettes in our country. On the criminal side, Chair, SARS has also taken strong action against a variety of alleged smugglers, and during the past financial year, 149 criminal cases were referred to the National Prosecuting Authority for prosecution. In the same year, 56 cases went to court and convictions were obtained. In addition to the criminal cases, and that is in page 6, Chair, of the notes that I handed over, if you can't follow me there. Chair, I'm trying to be as quick as possible. So what are we doing to enhance our resources? The systems and processes changes are only as effective as the people that are using them, Chair, and a critical component of this process will always remain the skills, the integrity, and the professionalism of the people that are involved on customs side. In the past financial year, Chair, like Home Affairs has done, we have appointed an additional 625 customs and border control inspectors, bringing the total number of CBCU officials to 1,313, the number of officers in the frontline unit, and they are deployed in the 42 or 43 border posts that we have at present. This is in addition, Chair, to 1,713 trade operations personnel who manage the verification of declaration, people that conduct the routine inspection and audits, and other interventions that we have. On the anti-corruption side, Chair, we have adopted, as you know, a zero-tolerance policy to any form of corruption. In relation to cases of fraud and corruption involving customs officials reported in the last financial year, 9 customs officials were arrested, 12 were dismissed, 8 issued with warnings, and 6 resigned when charges were brought against them. The formation of the Joint Anti-Corruption and Security and Customs Forum in SARS has also resulted in the establishment and implementation of joint strategies to prevent, detect corrupt activities in the customs environment. And we also have about 42 cases that were referred to the anti-corruption task team of the JCPS cluster, Chair. Working together for greater efficiency is the only way, Chair, as the DG has demonstrated. As part of our modernization program, we are also working with the transport and logistic industry, including clearing agents, importers, exporters, and with technology companies who provide systems throughout the supply chain. Chair, I think I should stop here, Chair. We're also working with the tobacco industry to come up with a new marker for tobacco, because the big issue there is to detect which is a legitimate and an illegitimate cigarette. And Chair, honestly speaking, we encourage the health department to really make sure that we stop South Africans from smoking. Chair, we have almost one-to-one import parallel of illegal cigarettes. So, you know, you are never sure whether you are smoking a dangerous illegal cigarette or a proper cigarette. So it's important, Chair, that we develop this marker as quickly as possible to protect our own people from this illicit product. So let me stop there and give the police an opportunity to brief you on what they are doing. General Mawela.
Madam Chair and Honourable Members, Major General Zuma, the head of our border policing, will lead us in the presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Honourable. honorable members, I'm beginning from slide number 50. I'll just give a brief history of the border police. From 2006, the SAPS management approved the separation of ports of entry and borderline functions. Those who are responsible for the port of entry were placed within the division, PSS, and those who were responsible for the borderline were placed within the division, visible policing. In 2010, both components were combined or merged into one component under the division ORS, which is now called border policing. The border policing objective is to enhance national security of the Republic by combating, detecting, and investigating crime within the port environment, and to ensure that criminal syndicates and enterprises are shut down and criminals are brought to justice, and the rest of the issues that are mentioned there. Slide number 52, the categories of the border environment. We've got the air borders, which include the international airport, which we are policing, the 10 airports that have been mentioned by the Commissioner for SARS, domestic airports, which are linked to international airport are policed, but those that are standing alone, they are at the responsibility of the local police station. The airstrips are also the responsibility of the local police station. Sea borders, we've got international harbors, which are 8, and those that are policed, policed by us, and the domestic ones, the other ones that are 92, are the responsibility of the local police stations. Slipways that are closer to our harbors are our responsibility. Those that are away are the responsibility of the local police stations. The land borders, we've got commercial, semi-commercial, and non-commercial ports of entry. We are involved in 53, those that have been mentioned by the DG of Home Affairs. And the borderline environment, we are partly responsible for the border where the SNDF has not taken over yet, but most of the areas have been taken over. Transfrontier parks, we are collaborating with stakeholders, Sun Park, SNDF, and other stakeholders, Home Affairs and Customs. Rail crossing, a collaboration with the railway police, Home Affairs, and other stakeholders. It's just random operations that we conduct on cargo trains. The informal crossings are the responsibility that we jointly, as well as the local police stations, are monitoring on continuous basis. The specialized operations that we conduct at sea, I'm just focusing on the responsibility of border police. Where in the 8 harbors where we are responsible is for the enforcement of all laws in terms of the ISPS code. We've got the waterborne patrol units, which are patrolling the 12 nautical miles. We do have divers, of skippers, and coxswains within our formation. We are policing the buoy mooring and outer anchorage. The offshore refueling platform for the vessels that do not berth on our harbor. We participate in sea rescue operations in conjunction with the National Sea Rescue Institute. In Mossel Bay, early last year, there was a spectacular rescue operation conducted by our members under the adverse sea conditions, where the vessel in distress, their sailors were rescued by our members. We do profiling and damaging of suspicious vessels. We do the protection of vulnerable and available cargo. These are, at times, vessels that are carrying vulnerable cargo. Some of them are military vessels that will be informed in, before their arrival, and will put in place the mechanism to protect. Some of them are military vessels. from various countries. And to continue there, with our function, we do the policing of passenger terminal, passport control, working together with Home Affairs, baggage profiling and rummaging, ensuring access and egress control to critical areas within the harbor. We do processing of the vehicle in the vehicle areas for import and exported vehicles. And we conduct joint operation on counterfeit goods at cargo facilities, and we get the assistance from the brand holders. We do the profiling, and at times we conduct tunnel searches of goods, train, and containers that will normally be conducted at our dry port facilities. Again, we do the policing of vulnerable and strategic port facilities. Like at the Devon Harbor, for example, we look after the Katra complex facility, which is the strategic facility for the country in terms of fuel supply to the whole SADC region. And there are other facilities that we look after. We do the profiling and processing of cargo because we could not process and search all the cargo containers that they arrived due to the gridlock that was explained by the commissioner of staff. We balance trade and security, of course. Whenever we conduct our operations, we ensure that there's no difficulties in terms of bringing the economy to a gridlock. We further, when it comes to borderline operations, I just want to observe that on the borderline operation, there was a scale down of operations to the cabinet memorandum where it was approving the handing over of functions from the SAPS to the Defence Force. And the sub-operational areas in the borderline currently, it is a minimum deployment of 27 members in the border between South Africa and Botswana. That is over and above the members that we have at the port of entry, because we are using port of entry along that border as basis for operations. And between Namibia and South Africa, we deploy an additional 30 members. The additional 30 members is over and above the number of members that we have and in our port of entry in that area on detached duty basis. And I may say also, which does not appear on the slide there, between the Soto and South Africa, in Hemby and Upper Tugela bases, those bases have not been handed over. We deploy 25 members for borderline duties in that area. Between the Soto and South Africa, in the Maluti base, we deployed 25 members. At Telebridge, we deployed 25. At Forestburg, in the northern part, in Kwakwa, we deployed 24 members for borderline operation. The bases that have been handed over to the SNDF, when we hand over the bases, we hand over the function in those areas. So the bases that have been handed over is Point Rift, Mosina, Sand River, Macadamia, Jumu, and Zostral. Those bases are bordering between South Africa, Limpopo, South Africa, Mpumalanga, South Africa, Swaziland, and South Africa, Mozambique. The bases that have been handed over, the first one that appears on slide number 59 is the Maluti base that has been divided into two. Part of the Maluti base will remain with the SAPS, and part of it will be used by the SNDF. The SNDF pointed out that they do not need the whole base for their operation. They just need part of the base. And the same was done with Lady Brent. Lady Brent has been divided into SNDF and SAPS So it will be separated into two. Other bases that have been handed over, Roypo Kraal was brought forward. It appears as the base that has to be brought forward on the 31st of March 2012, together with Father Vakter, but those dates have been brought forward and those bases have been handed over to the SNDF. Pongola, Matimbo, and Basebridge. Basebridge has been closed down completely. The handing over process, the process was to ensure that there is no security void on the operational mission area. So there has been an arrangement with the SNDF through our ongoing meeting at CJO with regard to the bases that we evacuate, then the SNDF will take over. So we always make arrangements for preventing the security void.
Because you answer, we're going to extra minutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The operational strategy, I'll just mention the first point, which is the all police resources within the Port Mission area are under one command. We place them under one command, all resources, irrespective of whether in that area we're doing borderline or port of entry. And then on the next slide, Madam Chair, those are the operational strategies that we employ in conducting our business at the border. Slide number 63 continues with our strategies that we employ, and the structures are influenced by those activities within those ports. On challenges, slide number 64, specialized training relevant to borders is expensive and unavailable within the human resource development, like aviation and maritime training, but the work is in progress to ensure that those costs are available. And the equipment sometimes is not suitable. We're talking about sometimes some of our boats that we use to patrol, they still have GPS, if they were having the radar, they would have fitted our condition. The specialized logistical and technical support not available. That was meant only for borderline operations, and that has been solved by the other NGOs taking over, like medics and food supplies and so forth. If I go to slide number 55, challenges continue. Baggage pilferage, for instance, at airports, there's a figure there of 3,169. Bags that were pilfered, interfered with, or damaged. That is out of 4.5 million bags. Out of 4.5 million bags processed in the same period. Therefore, it gives you a percentage of 0.007 bags that were pilfered, which is not good. And measures are ongoing to address the challenge together with aviation security agencies, airlines, airport company, and other law enforcement agencies. Another challenge is the lack of adequate and proper residential accommodation at land ports, particularly. This issue is being addressed together with DPW, our supply chain management, as well as through BZOCC projects, like for instance at Field Swift. There is an ongoing project of providing facilities such as housing. Again, there are legal issues pertaining to the functioning of staff in the proposed one-stop border post, issues like the jurisdiction of the courts, as well as the powers of the police if we were to operate in a neighboring country. Those are issues that our legal experts are sensitive at this moment. Thank you very much, Madam Chair and Honourable Members. I think the last one, number 67, slide, is the collaboration between the stakeholders. It continues, it has been mentioned by the DGs and the Commissioner. We collaborate with the customs and anti-smuggling teams. We do have Durban, Johannesburg anti-smuggling teams in most of our ports, and as well as the joint operations with all formations as we are sitting here. The provincial BZOCC, the local BZOCC, the national BZOCC, I the forums that we are using to interact at all points. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Chair, the SNDF will be led by Mayor General Parko. Over to you, General.
Madam Chair, honorable members, I am, just for the record, I am Mulelo Ephraim Parko. I had this morning some other struggle with my name. I represent the SNDF and basically coming from joint operations. My scope will be quick as the approach that has been alluded to this morning. Our mandate as the South African National Defence Force is the RFA, Territorial Sovereignty, Defence of the RFA, Territorial Sovereignty and Borderline Security. Now, we've quoted the, under our mandate, long from the constitution of the South Africa, of the RFA. I'm not going to it, madam. It's something that is already known. It's something that had to be put there to just get the correct bearing. On page 2, I think what I do want to emphasize is that further to the above, in terms of the Section 10 of the Defense Act, number 42 of 2002, the South African National Defense Force members, while still employed, have the same power that it is the set members under Section 56 of the Police Act. I'll just pass the rest of the other details. The further slide is that at the bottom there, what I do want to emphasize is the African National Defense Force must be placed in service by the President of the Minister of Defense, the Minister of Defense, through the approval and issue of formal employment statements, the so called presidential cabinet, or what we call presidential cabinet. Our challenge is strictly, as we all know that we were in the South African National Defense Force at the borders at some point. We left the borders as directed by government, and you would know that we've been involved also, apart from assisting the police in internally with crime, before we went back to the borders, we were also involved in the external environment, which are still continuing to be involved. We would have a slide of the last slide in our presentation to give you the full picture. But sticking to the current directive to get back to the borders, our challenge today is the current scale of deployment based on all of our commitments, including the internal and external development of infrastructure for the borderline security. Part of some of the infrastructure was referred to by colleagues of the Fed, but because of the intensity and the scale of deployment, there's a lot of infrastructure that must be developed. And current allocation does not make provision for the execution of phase 3 and 4. Just remember that our going back to the borders is in phases. We have done phase 1 and phase 2. A map will indicate the exact position. And then the development and acquiring of new equipment through acquisition process is timing. As a result, somewhere we indicate that in some cases we would prefer to take off the shelf product to try and adhere to the minister's instruction that. Instead of the phases and the time given, the whole process will be brought forward. The challenge is continued. The MTF indicated no additional funding. The medium term, there's no additional funding. We'll the POD, the area for this operation, that is the borderline security operation, the borderline security. The policy proposal stated that the financial requirement is at 1 billion, 1.2 billion, right? This is a shortfall of 893 million. The shortfall includes vehicles, facilities, transportation, infrastructure, development, surveillance equipment, flight hours. Just remember that we're also talking about the land borders plus air borders plus the sea borders, which the introduction by the chair said the length of the borders has already been mentioned. Of course, there's also the repair and maintenance of the Namo fence, but not included. Our approach to challenge the concept for the South African Council fits for involvement in border safeguarding is a research between the following framework: border safeguarding of the land, air, and maritime as a component of the defense of the territorial integrity of the rate of the in the domestic layer. We do that in terms of detection, repair, maneuver, and to respond to adverse situations. The strategic concept continues. The required end result is defined as a condition where deterrence is effected, control is exercised, adversarial situations are contained, and interdepartmental cooperation, which is very important in this business. Exercise this morning is established and maintained. It's very important for the South African National Defense Force. We realize that we cannot be the only role player, so we take and recognize the interaction between the departments that has been mentioned this morning. Our phased approach, phase 1 and 2 completed service companies. Just to those that might not understand, the company is in and around 150 members in a single company. I guess, supposed with the challenges that have been mentioned by South, by Home Office, you know, we need to close gaps within the border. So I think the SNDF, at the end of the deployment, we should have 22 companies in the whole state border. But phase 3, that's for the year 2012-13, there will be additional 4 companies in the 7 that I've already mentioned. And the area of deployment is in the Zimbabwe border area, 1 company additional, Mpumalanga, Eastern Cape, and the state. And phase 4 for 2013-2014, another additional 4 companies to make 15 companies in the area that I mentioned. Other force levels required for the 12-13 is the engineer troop for deployment in Messina and Academia until the maintenance of the field. Chair, I hope I'm doing well for time. I'm not going into all the details. But then the phase approach, mentioned here was mainly of the land forces. We must just take note that we also have hours for air support and then a sea day for maritime border safeguarding as well. Our action is process, permanent work group with the DPW on establishing infrastructure, the basis and maintenance on the various border licenses. We already are involved with them and want to take this opportunity to thank them for what they've done in terms of assistance in the infrastructure and our effort to get back to the border. But there's still a lot to be done and we appreciate the cooperation with them. And then the development of appropriate commercial off-the-shelf vehicles for deployed forces. Off-the-shelf because if it's on the shelf, you can buy it immediately and use it there and then. If it goes through acquisition, it might take some of the process, might take up 10 years, and we really don't have 10 years before we complete the deployment. communication and MOU itself in Ethiopia in the draft format, which is still completed. Our current action process, development of the business strategy to ensure situational awareness. The map that I referred to earlier on tells us the areas around our borders, land borders, priority one, and which is already catered for. Priority two is on the northwestern part of the country, including the longest border with RSA Botswana, which is not yet catered for. As I've mentioned earlier on, it takes a little bit of time to build all these companies to put the troops on the ground, which we don't have them available. Those that we have, some of them, most of them are deployed in the external environment. And the next slide will show us the specific areas that we have already deployed. Phase one in the areas of Zimbabwe, Mozambique, and South Africa, deployed phase two. The map is red. That is also completed. And then phase three, the area map is green, still has to be deployed. And then our successes and achievements quickly, change. Between 6th of April 2011 till up to date, October 2011, we had, as the SADF, apprehended 10,000, almost 10,000 illegal foreigners from other countries, including mainly from Zimbabwe, through 70 criminal arrests, stolen vehicles recovered, weapons recovered, 6,000 kgs of data confiscated, copper recovered, which, as all, we all know, affects the electricity flow in various areas, and livestock recovered. 11 meters of contraband. This is my last slide. I hope it will take 1 minute if you so allow me. I just want the panel to speak to the slide quickly. The last slide that is coming. Thank you.
Madam Chair, just to indicate in context that we're not only involved in Corona, by going back to Corona up until next year is an additional 1,600 troops. In the current external environment, we've got just over 3,400 troops. And then we still have to adhere to major events, COP17, and contribute to support other government departments. And then we have to get to our audit obligations in SADC and with other countries in our planning exercises. What we want to indicate is that Corona and going back to the border is one element of the total foreign commitment of the Defence Force. And for every troop that we deploy, we need at least three at the back. We currently deploy for 6 months at a time, and then they have to retrain. And you, in your social obligation, you don't want to do that more than once in 18 months. Most of our members and even their wives are deployed simultaneously, and we're sitting with homes without parenthood during these deployments. So you have at the stage about 6,000 troops fixed in audit operations, which imply you need another 18,000 at the back, just to indicate the total context of the defense commitment. Thank you.
Honorable Chair, that was defense, that is in charge of defense. Next is DPW. We had arguments at the ICRC of who is in charge of defense. Is it DPW that are supposed to construct defense, which defense must look after? I hope they will answer that question, sir. DPW?
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Honorable Chairpersons, honorable members, it is evident, and as the Commissioner indicated, that there are a significant number of departmental role players functioning at South African border posts. The role of public works is to accommodate all of these in co-located, suitable, multifunctional facilities on the various border post sites. The department is a member of the BPOCC and receives instructions. instructions on human rights requirements from member departments within the BCOCC where priorities are decided within funding availability. In terms of the achievements we'd like to support, perhaps going through one by one the key achievements or field trips, 100% support services completed and time handed over on the 31st of March 2010. With regard to Golena Port Ventry, phase 1, the water facility, 100% completed, site handed over on the 31st of March. The housing component phase 2 is currently 60% complete. With regard to the redevelopment of the Bongo, the freight facility being phase 1 is 100% complete, site handed over on the 31st of March 2010. Phase 2, the pedestrian facility, is 100% complete, although we note that there are some adjustments that need to be made to that specific element. With regard to phase 3, the housing development currently in the planning phase. School bus tax, phase 1 being the port facility, 98% complete. The building is expected to be operational by the end of this month. Phase 2, the housing project, unfortunately was delayed due to the very late discovery of the illegal mining that had happened on the site, which has implications on the construction of the facility. With regard to the upgrading of the power supply at Waterberg, there are three projects 100% completed, Plugin, Fortress, and Zanzibar. Priority projects according to the user asset management plan, in planning stage, there's 9 projects currently that are prioritized. Davenport Hospital, Brooklyn Bridge, Waterloo, Sixburg, Ice Bridge, Matera Bridge, Cordy Bay, housing projects at Sofatec, Golela, and Lubombo. Honourable Chairperson and members, this is a summarized view of the achievements of these significant ones. With regard to the challenge faced, perhaps an introductory note would be to say that the design solutions are very complex, generous at border posts. Noting the various processes that have to be delivered and accommodated for the various departments, as well as the vast number of pedestrians and vehicular traffic that passes through the border post facility in and out of the country, as well as electronic requirements that are needed. This makes it a very difficult machine to plan, and where there are site constraints, the moving the traffic, the road, that is a compounding factor for both the contractors as well as the providers who prepare these meetings in the first place. Our key challenges, as indicated on the slide, are the backlog of accommodation of the landfall of entry. We notice that 68% of the landfalls are currently overutilized. However, the new planning process and the instructions we receive from BCOEC assist us with the prioritization of projects to overcome this problem. As indicated, the site topography makes it very difficult to implement the priority. You would think you found it responsibility contract with them and apply prescribed penalties for non-conforming contracts. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. The money back people now from National Credit. George?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, for the meeting. There are a lot of things that the National Treasury has done. The ones that we're going to discuss here are just some of them. Because we've got a number of departments that are operating at Port, it has become necessary that when budget requests are being submitted to the National Treasury, prior to the submission of those budget requests, there should be a discussion within the BCOCC or the ICACF now, if necessary, of those budgets, so that the different departments can become aware of what each one is doing, and then also become aware of perhaps resource implications that might flow from funding a given priority at the Port of Entry. The National Treasury has been closely involved with the development of the national policy on one stop border ports to promote trade facilitation purposes. And we are looking for funding to help with the development of this policy. And we do believe that we find the funding. There was a time when it was thought that South Africa was going to fund the entire one stop border post development project at Libombo in San Francisco. But over time, it has become necessary to emphasize that the two countries should jointly fund that project. And the two countries have agreed to provide resources for that project. The different departments that function at the border and the border, they have got various infrastructure requirements. Now, instead of each department asking for a budget for its infrastructure requirements, these infrastructure requirements are being funded through a provision on the public works board. There is a lot of funding that has been provided over the years to the various departments that are involved at the Port of Entry and at the borderline. And the sums are in billions. If we were to put the budget together, it's in billions. We don't have the figure with us here. We are working on putting that figure together and can make it available to the committee later. And I would like to point out also that it's not just departments that are active on the borderline and post of entry, but also public entities like the airport company South Africa, the South African National Road Agency. Now, if you were to bring those budgets also into the picture, then the actual total budget would be much, much lighter. Because of the, now I'm going to talk about the challenges. Because of the financial crisis that we are all aware of, there have been very significant constraints on revenue generation, and therefore the various priorities that are related to border management have had to be funded through efficient saving and reprioritization. Now this is something that is true of not just the border related activities, but so much else within government. Additional requirements have to be funded through savings and through a reprioritization of funds in the existing baseline. We do recognize that more will need to be done in terms of providing funding for border management related activities. And specifically, there is a move to recognize border management as a function in line with the functional budgeting approach that the National Treasury has adopted. And what that means is that the various budgets that are related to border management will be put together, and then, of course, in collaboration and consultation with the various accounting authorities responsible for the various departments involved at port of entry and borderline, funds might need to be moved around so that expenditure is much more efficient. Now, obviously, in a border cost environment, given that we've got a number of departments that are involved, there are some challenges in relation to the ownership, stewardship, and accounting responsibilities arising from the provision of infrastructure facilities for joint facilitation by departments. I will stop there.
Chair, thank you very much again for the opportunity and the limited time that you have given us, and we hope that with the question and answer will be able to clarify most of the issues that might be arising from the honourable member. In summary, Chair, you have seen that our country has really bad borders, and they differ in conditions and need and in terms of conditions and risks that pertain to the different borders that we have, and they require quite different and peculiar solutions to each of those borders. And also, Chair, you have seen through our presentation that it's important that we balance trade and security priorities in dealing with all the solutions that we have. Thank you very much again, Chair, and for the time and your attention.
of SEPs to contribute to effectively patrolling our coastline. And I think I will stop there. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Chair. The court here. The first question goes to SAP. The handing over of the bases that you indicated to us, how are they aligned to the budget allocated? And to the public works, the backlog of accommodation, was that ever allocated to your expenditure? If yes, then the money was then used for what? If no, why? That question to the National Treasury. I understand, and I hear it for the first time, that the infrastructure, the money, the funding for the infrastructure is unfortunately has been utilized through the public works. And there is so much of the moving funding getting moved. So I don't know whether moving, are you referring to the government or what? But however though, when that process takes place, where is FIC? Do they monitor the movement of the money? Because movement of the money being not monitored is a serious problem. So, and secondly, to the National Treasury, when the public works say the budget, when the staff says they shared the budget for all this, what is all this? Because according to the money bill, every cent is allocated for every activity. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Co-Chair. I'd like to start with a general question and then I would pose a question to the SAT and the FANDF. The general question is that on the 3rd of June 2009, President Jacob Zuma in his State of the Nation address said that we would begin the process of setting up a border management agency. Why has the border management agency not been set up 2 years after the president undertook to set up that agency? That is the first question. The second question is to the SAT. If you look at slide 57 in respect of the RSA Botswana border and the RSA Namibia border, my question to you is it correct that there are 27 members of the SAT deployed for borderline security on the RSA Botswana border, which would mean that there is one member of the SAT per 68 kilometers of border? Again, in respect of the RSA Namibia border, is it correct that there are only 30 members of the SAT responsible for borderline security on the RSA border, and that would mean that there is one member of the SAT per 32 kilometers of border. Is that correct? Then to come to the SANDF, I'd like to compare the deployment in 1994 with the deployment in 2011. My understanding in 1994, there were 28 companies deployed, which based on a calculation of 150 members per company would mean that there were 4,200 soldiers deployed for border safeguarding, which would mean that there are roughly 1.4 soldiers per kilometer border. Now in 2011, we have 7 companies. That's about 1,050 soldiers, and that would mean that we have one soldier per 4.6 kilometers of border. Is it correct that there are, in fact, roughly 3,150 fewer soldiers deployed on our borders today compared to 1994, and that means that our borders are in fact less secure, not more secure?
Thank you, Kote. Chair, I have 2 questions, one from Home Affairs, the police, and the Department of Defense. Chair, without William Martin, the presentation from Home Affairs, surely the presenter stated very clearly that they are not his master voices. But the question will be, have they elaborated a plan then to advise government on the course to be taken, and have they engaged on the question of xenophobia in its entirety? On the police chair, they talked about informal clauses, private airspace, and race crossing. What exactly is that they are doing in trying to deal with the challenges around those three? And lastly, Chair, on the Department of Defense, do you have the companies that were contracted to put up the fence, who maintains the fence, and what are the financial implications of that fence? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Let me call. You come immediately after one of the questions.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Cortez, I have two questions. One is for FAF and the other one cut across. The one for FAF is as the Portugal Committee on Human Affairs, we did the oversight visit at the port, at the border post, and the scanning of the group was a serious concern for the portfolio committee. And the manual counting of the group is causing a serious security problem. Listening to the presentation from SAS, I don't know when are they going to have the scanners for the groups at the border post, because I think that is very critical. If they could at least indicate when are they going to have scanners for the booths, because it is a security risk. The second one, Chair, it's cut across. As members of parliament, we thought if we are having a presentation 4 weeks before COP17, which is an international conference, and the event of that magnitude is going, it's also posing serious threats for the country. And we know that it's not only invited guests that are going to attend the meeting. There will be demonstrators, there will be protesters, there's a lot that is going to come in. And at the same time, it's going to be an opportunity for crime syndicates around the world to take that opportunity. And the worst part is also during the peak season, which is the festive season. But none of the departments mentioned the readiness for COP17. I thought when we get this integrated report, we get at least the readiness in preparation for COP17. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Preferably, I'm the capital and George. George is for COP. My first question would, let me take the presentation. I think this coordination is beautiful. We've got enormous challenges. My question will go to the you are complaining on residential accommodation. Never since coming at the Department of Public Works is addressing this issue. I am a bit confused. Can you detail that? Because the residential accommodation for the employees can be cost for a better output. My second question on basis handed over to the over. You say you made a list of points to the senior, and later on you said Roy Bob Carl, Paul Rocker, also they are handed over. I'm just questioning
Are you not updating your records before you bring them here? Because I'm not sure now whether this report should come on again in our presence. Chairperson, it is a great concern that we have illegal crossing of people as well as goods in the country. Can first tell us who and what has been done? Is this problem escalating or is it decreasing? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Some of the questions that I wanted to bring up have been presented already. Chairperson, in all the presentations, I have not heard of any of the department telling us whether there are good prevention mechanisms in place in all that has been presented. But the other part to Home Affairs, at one point there was an AU, I can't remember what is an agreement or what, which allowed miners who were in South Africa, who took their pensions and went back to their country, since they were now qualified citizens of South Africa, to from time to time move into South Africa to come and collect either their pensions and whatever that they've left in South Africa. And those citizens, some of them, when they left the country, they had children, some who were still at a tender age, some who were students, and so forth. Now, what I want to know is from whom I said, because you have records of people when the person has applied for an ID or for a birth certificate. Have you not identified when were these people eligible to be South Africans? If they were eligible to be South Africans before 1996, obviously that agreement represents them. And if they were South Africans after 1996, obviously those people should be arrested. We should not be talking about them now. On the presentation from SAP, they gave us a picture of sharing borderline. Certain parts of the borderlines are meant by the defense, and certain parts of the borderlines are meant by SAP in the same vicinity. Now, what I don't understand is it an independent agreement outside the policy, or is it a position which is created for them to apply? I'm interested to know about that, because the borderlines, in my understanding, are to be transferred to the defense now. When we were doing our oversight on the border, there was an outcry of the facilities in the border. Now, what I want to know, since we are all working for one government, why is it a problem for one department when it leaves a facility to leave it in the manner in which SAP left some facilities in the borderlines? Because those borderlines
were completely undesirable. Now, is it a policy of department to neglect facilities of government, or is it because when another department has to take over, that department must start all over again on its own?
And let me also thank the presenters from different departments. Chairperson, my question cuts across all the departments. I'm aware that this is not an annual report, but what I find lacking in their presentation is the time frame. For instance, staff indicated that they have deployed so many police officers at the borderline. That number that they mentioned, 20-25 or so. What is it that they want to achieve with that? When do they hope to achieve what they intend achieving? I believe that this is not the lacking character with them. That would assist us in holding them accountable to say you promised to do this by this and you haven't done it. So that we even know the mechanisms that they have in place to ensure that they achieve what they have set themselves. That's what I find making sure of, which I believe is quite paramount. The other one, Chairperson, mainly because as I was asking, maybe because of our department that we are forced to interrogate in this document, I tried to follow some of the documents. I couldn't get it. What I'm interested in, Chairperson, is the, yes, we have, they indicated that we have 730 registered airports with 10 international airports and airstrips. What I'm interested in, because I believe that this airstrip also pose a danger to our country as well. How many of these airstrips do we have in the country, and where are they across the country? The other one is really has to with regard to, because it was mentioned that the foreign nationals come twice in a month to the country. So what we wanted to know is I want to repeat that question because it has been asked, because I was going to ask, what is it that you are recommending such government does to help you address this? Because I believe that we are together in this
exercise.
Some of my questions are already asked, but I still have one. To say, are our measures at the airport, detection measures, can they compete internationally? Why I'm saying that is some 3 months ago we took a trip to London. Our baggage went through a tumble detection with nothing detected. When we got to London, our bag, unfortunately, we had to move some items from our bag. So that's why I'm asking, are our systems competing internationally? Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr.
Tedford. It's the DA, George. Thank you very much, Edward. There is no doubt that the freer movement of goods and people stimulates economic activity, and that it should be encouraged as much as possible. And that also that the African continent has huge potential as a domestic market for South Africa, and that if we're going to be a serious member of the BRICS, we actually have to stimulate the domestic African market. I just want some clarity from the Department of Home Affairs on slide number 39. Where they make reference to immigrants' current economic activities. Now, there are five pieces of the pie. But there's only four pieces in the key, so I'm not exactly sure what they all mean. But what it seems to be saying here is that there's a piece for 49% of immigrants that are unemployed / nothing. I'm just wondering whether that includes dependents and children. And if it does include dependents and children, it means that a very significant part of the immigrant population is actually involved in economic activity. Then, if it doesn't include it, it means that nearly 50% of immigrants are not involved in economic activity, and then I'm wondering how they survive on a daily basis then, because clearly there must be some kind of economic activity going on, because we aren't actually seeing any mass starvation. And then, to my mind, obviously the key question on immigration is surely whether it's good for our economy or whether it isn't good for our economy. And I think that's something we must lose sight of, because certainly economic history tells us that it is very good for an economy, for people and goods can move around as freely as possible, obviously within certain rules and regulations. And then finally, in the Standing Committee on Finance, we started a conversation on a joint border crossing with Mozambique. It was an innovation that we started talking about, and that we agreed that it was necessary for us to look at other departments. Now, I think this presentation today has been very interesting, but I've been a little bit all over the place, and I'm just wondering whether that conversation is part of this one, because we haven't seen much detail on the Mozambique issue. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Member. We are taking the next round of hands. I notice Honourable George Mulleti now called. Honourable Nishan will be the next. Honourable Funeral. Honourable Duarte. Honourable Amy. Honourable Kam. Honourable Marcella. Honourable Kanyako. Honourable Tibedi. Honourable Colaban. In that order, Honourable Member. In that order.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you all the presenters. I have considered the message, but I'm worried about the number of challenges that have been thrown to you. For instance, SARS talks about rat covering and all those things. But state security agents put it even more serious threat, threat apart from South African borders remain a virus of human trafficking, smuggling, human trafficking, and illegal entry. What supervision and security management. If they look at all these things, surely they could be addressed. And we hear just generally how these things are addressed. Whereas it would have been good for us to say, this is what we are doing, this is what we think by transmitting some of these things. For instance, the issue of the energy, of the like to carry a special park and home affairs, the issue of anti-corruption. Good to take advantage in the anti-corruption measures. South Africa now, anti-corruption measures are becoming more strong than a real, but it's too much corruption. Corruption is getting our hands. So, what does it mean? You see, I saw one of your presentations where you talk about the number of people that have been arrested, the number of people that have been dismissed, the number of people that are being threatened. That also again is a real number. That there is a serious problem with corruption. Now my question is that something which we can say you see all of it with all its bad. But one thing you can see some of us visited for more purposes, you can see without being told, even by officer, that there is some improvement. It's so much that when I heard about their report, some of us were surprised. And I think this is what we want to hear. It's not so
know that there are these, we know these challenges. What are we doing to make sure is there a plan with time frame? You see, that's my first thing. First of all, is the absolute responsibility to start absolute local police station responsible. I know the country, etc. They are absolute, which are far away from any police station. Now my question is, if you are saying local police stations are responsible for the police, local police stations are responsible. How are you going to do that? How practical is what you're saying? Because these S3s are what also the security agents bear the threat. Because you can let those S3s at night. I don't believe there's any police, especially if S3 is about 70, 80 kilometers away from it. The police station, and they are many. So how do you say you are managing them through local police station? The last question is budget constraint. You know, the way the gentleman from National Treasure was saying, with all the problems, he put it nicely but politically. You talk more like a politician than a person. But what you are telling us, that there's no money to do some of these things. My question is now, how, with all the problems and the challenges have been mentioned, if that's not better, it says, you know, they are put by the constraints, how do we hope to get out of the situation if you say that is, because also you mentioned vaguely that we want to take from there and there, but we want concrete. What is it? If you say they are by the constraints, surely you should have mechanisms that says, with the budget constraints, this is what we're doing to make sure that this work does not stop. Thank you, Madam.
Thank you, Chairperson. A number of my questions have been asked, and I want to emphasize the issue of challenges that are facing different departments, that we need a deeper, detailed explanation of what is being done. I know Madam has spoken about that, but that's a matter of time. Particularly hearing that the radar coverage is insufficient, which makes us vulnerable. We want to know how this problem is going to be solved rather than just hear that. My other question to the Commissioner of that, he said only proper cover is being searched. Now I want to know what processes are followed and what informs the decision to profile a cover, because they are selecting, they're not doing everything. So what informs the decision which cargo to search? And also, I wanted to ask a question about what my colleague was saying, why the scanners are not used for this cargo, so that all cargo can be scanned. And the last one to the DG of Home Affairs, he said one way of trying to deal with illegal immigration is to prevent these potential illegal immigrants while they're still in their country. I want to know, as we're told that they're dealing with 50 airlines and also with the 12,000 aircraft landings in the country, how are they ensuring that, how do they identify the people that are potential illegal immigrants, and are all these airlines cooperating with Home Affairs to ensure that people who are will be unwanted in South Africa are not allowed?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I want to start to say that all the presentations today was actually disturbing when it comes to border control. Because actually I think that we have different portfolio committees today heard that when it comes to border control in South Africa, that we don't have an efficient border control. And I think the core of all the presentations today is actually summarized in the slide where we look at all the significant challenges South Africa faces in securing its borders. And it links up with some other questions. On the aviation side,
radar coverage monitoring South African airspace currently insufficient. I also didn't hear today what corrective steps we are going to take. Transit facilities at Olaf Tambo remain vulnerable. I didn't hear any steps taken as far as that is concerned. When it comes to the land port and everything, vulnerable border line fences, is it a money problem? Poor security management by contracted private security companies? What steps have been taken against those private security companies? Corrupt officials. What steps have been taken? What did we do to prevent that? Lack of effective patrols along the maritime borderline. Abuse of business processes. Non-adherence to prescribed legislation or to, and relevant code. Chairperson, I think if I go to ask each and every department, they can try to say, but we don't have money. We heard that National Treasury today said that the different departments will have to collaborate on the budget. Now I can ask National Treasury, the South African National Defence Force. Surely, they made presentations and they said actually for Operation Corona, they need 1.2 billion. But they actually only received about 300 million, a shortfall of almost 900 million. Now what's the problem? Isn't there any money? Was the correct procedures not be taken? What is the attitude of South African government when it comes to border control? I heard today from Public Works, and if I heard it correctly, I only heard that they are now actually now looking at contractors to have a penalty clause. The gentleman is shaking his head. Well, that's what he said. Because they're looking at penalty clauses in the contract. That should have been there long ago. Chairperson, I would like that, and I don't think we're going to get the answer to this. We are too many members asking questions and time is running out, but at least, Chairperson, these significant challenges, at least I would like to all the committee members to receive a written response from all the different departments how they're going to solve those problems. Or else, Chairperson, we're not going to have progress. In fact, we will have progress backwards. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much for all the presenters who have presented before us. Some of my questions have been actually asked, and then I've got only one to ask with regard to the South African National Defence Force, where they are actually indicating to us that they have done progress in terms of arresting and apprehending some of the criminals. But there is also one thing that I also want to find out with regard to the weapons. They are saying that they have actually recovered about 16 weapons. So I just also want to find out what kind of weapons, because they've been actually listing the things that they actually have recovered, but they haven't actually given us what kind of weapons they have recovered. They only said 16 weapons were recovered. So, and then the second question is with regard from the DPW on the question of non-compliance of contractors. I just want to find out, was this issue of contractors not actually doing their work properly? It has been in the public domain for a long, long, long time. So I just want to find out as public works, what actually are they doing regarding that? Because this is a threat to most of us, because most of money is being used, but some contractors are actually not complying. So what actually are you going to do with regard to that? Because we need to know exactly what are you going to do. Thank you.
Another welcome.
Yes, thanks, Chair. Yes, Chair, I'm sorry to say, but I think the presentation yesterday is more of a cause for concern than a cause for comfort. In the sense that, and also then linking up with the question of Honorable Groenewald, it seems that both the police and the defense force, who are actually responsible for securing our borderline, have identified numerous challenges, equipment and gear not suitable in the case of the police, border security, latest technology not available, and so on. The defense force has done the same. In both cases, there are not really solutions offered by the police or the defense force for these particular problems. And with these extensive challenges that they have highlighted here, it actually seems that we are not making progress in terms of securing our border line. So I'd like to know from them, you know, what the actual solutions are to these challenges, and from National Treasury as well, as to what is the problem here that the necessary funding is not made available, or is the necessary funding made available but not put to good use? What exactly is the issue here? Secondly, Chair, it seems that the systems of the various departments have still not been integrated. There's no integrated systems. That's why Home Affairs is saying that they don't know the addresses of people and so on. I must say that it is really of great concern that at this late stage we still do not have integrated systems. And I'd like to know, what are the time frames in this regard? When are we going to have systems integrated so that Home Affairs, for example, make use of SARS information on addresses, whatever the case may be, etc.? Thirdly, and this is maybe the most serious, or one of the most serious of all the issues mentioned, and it seems to me that stating it as a lack of effective patrols along the maritime borderline is really an understatement and a euphemism in the extreme. Because my understanding is that our maritime borderline is almost not patrolled at all. What exactly is the position pertaining to our maritime borderline? How many ships do we have involved? How many people do we have in all those various ports you've mentioned? What exactly is the situation? Is our maritime borderline not even more porous than our borderline to the north?
Honorable, thank you, Cortez. You know, sometimes we are so rushed and harsh on ourselves. This gathering today is beginning to show us that we are all South Africans. It's a human reality type of a problem. I want to repeat, in lack of a word that I can use, it's a mixture, a human reality type of a problem. When we are having holidays, there is an area in KZN called Mkanyavuke, not far from Shabalala. Next to Swaziland, next to Mozambique, next to whatever. I thought somebody was going to be talking about traditional leaders, because it has got about more than three traditional leaders. Borders from Mozambique, from Swaziland, ourselves in South Africa, then three traditional leaders with their own policies. It's just an example, one example. I think time for boardroom politics is over now. We need to really make use of our oversight as this collective, not as one department going for an oversight and going for an oversight, because we won't know the taste of this biryani we are dealing with. If we are going one by one, we need to put a plate that will say it's running short of this taste. The taste is running short even now, as I was listening. We don't have international relations to tell us exactly. What are these countries where these people come from, say? You can't just be running short of your people and you don't know where they are going to, what happens to them when they are in the new countries. We're running short of the intelligence analysis of this biryani that we're talking about. And truly speaking, if we cannot, I know every movement has got a starting point. I will take this thing as a starting point, this gathering of ours. If we have another meeting of this nature, which I know my coaches will do it, otherwise we'll forever be arresting. We'll forever be feeding the arrested. We will forever be running short of people to arrest. We will forever be saying we don't have budget. Because we are the whole continent in one. We cannot run away from this reality. I'm talking as a public representative and as a person who takes leave sometimes and take money and go out and see on the ground what is happening. We are talking about boundaries. As a woman, I'm talking about a woman who has got fathers from these different fathers who come from, children from fathers who come from different boundaries. I'm talking about Mkanya Wute. One father comes from Mozambique, the other comes from Swaziland, the other father comes from South Africa. And where do you start? Where do you start to disentangle this type of a human reality of the problem? Bokote, thank you very much for calling us to this meeting. I take it as the beginning of a movement that will all of us strengthen our oversight roles, put together something that will make us to say intelligence, arrange this thing and tell us what to do as a country now, not as a person who is employed by this department and like, well, we'll go nowhere. As long as we take it like that, we are going nowhere. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mugabe Daly. Honorable Castellan.
Thank you, Chairperson. I am tempted to what other members have done, but I think I will not belabor my point, especially those that have been raised. The request is that one day I would hope that this parliament will sit down and make recommendations to SADC parliamentary forum and to SADC executive and say, when are we going to have a debate on the integration of our economies? And that when are we going to have a debate that is honest and informed by the current global challenges that we see today? Because what you have a challenge with, Chairperson, is that what we want to arrest and detain foreigners in South Africa, the question is, why are they coming to South Africa? And for as long as we don't answer that question, Chairperson, that remains a problem for as long as we don't answer that question honestly. So the issue about political regimes in the SADC and how influence and drive the agenda of democracy so that we can liberalize the economy and have integration of the economy. Chairperson, that is a debate that we need to have at this parliament. That takes me to page 1 where Home Affairs, Mr. Director General, and of course the presentation was very good. I think all the presenters were spot on, Chair. What is so much important about their presentation is that it is honest. And I don't think we should come here and lambast people who are honest. But we should say to them, to what extent are we using the kind of reports and challenges to bring some solution? Now that is what is lacking in what they are presenting. You've got people saying we've got a disease, it's getting out of control, but no one says we've got a cure, there's some medicine somewhere. And that is what we need to find. Using an example of MEX, saying this is how MEX would come in and where MEX would land at the end of the day. I would like to caution the department that we, Home Affairs, I know the Director General knows my stance on this one. Let us not necessarily use this as, you know, as an example of all foreigners that we find illegal in South Africa. MEX might be one example, but there might be many other different MEXs out there who are waiting for their permit from the Department of Home Affairs, where there is a challenge with the backlogs that are very serious that we need to address. So I'm trying to caution that not every illegal immigrant that is somewhere on the street is in fact illegal. But we need to address them by ensuring that we legalize them in the manner in which the laws are indicating. Obviously, one would not understand, say, where we come from, because this is not home affairs. But I think if you have got a permitting system that is not fully functional, then you are going to have a problem where people are illegal in any way. Lastly, when we did the oversight, I like the point that was raised by honorable member. I did not get a particular thing. Yes, I'm saying it. Because Uti, we need to go on the ground. As Stephenson, as the Home Affairs, you know, we went to the border pool. We've been traveling, criss-cutting the country, trying to say what are the problems. One of them is when the BCOCC, because one of the many said the borders are problematic, and I agree fully with him. Now we've got BCOCC that is there. You know, when you talk to BCOCC as a member of parliament, they think that's wasting their time. At Marseille, when we're asking them, how do you coordinate, they say it's very difficult. Then you want to know who's the manager here. No, the manager is doing shopping. There's a meeting somewhere in town. The manager comes back and he says, this from SARS, by the way. He says, no. I didn't know that you were coming. And I didn't know that you wanted to talk to me. Because I have some senior officials here. And that happened in Marseille. And I even felt that we're in a serious challenge here because we don't have the big machine guns to show them that please talk. Chairperson, I know this is something that involves many committees, so I need to respect the time. I need to respect the time. But I want to say this point that of border management agency is very crucial. We need to address that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Marcella. Honorable Kanyako.
Is it me? Oh, thank you. So there was another thing.
Chairperson, on I think it's line number 85, where you have the statistics about people arrested, stolen vehicles, and so on. I just want to get an idea about what really happens to apprehended illegal foreigners, because here it's just a question of having been apprehended, that we don't know what happens to them thereafter. Are they still in South Africa, or what's happening? Because just to know the figure that they are apprehended, it's not enough. As you have it here, it's an achievement, yes, but now what is happening to these people? Do you send them home, or is there another process that you go through before you can handle their case? I don't know. I need to know where they are now, right now as we speak. Are they still in South Africa or are they sent back home? Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Kanyako. I only know one Kanyako in this parliament, and it's you. Honorable Tibedi.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. The first point I wanted to talk about, actually, I think Honorable Bruno covered it quite extensively, the issue about South Africa facing challenges in securing its borders, which relates to aviation, land ports, and maritime. The only question I want to raise on this particular one, linking up with what Honorable members have said on this one, is to say, given that we are sitting around in the room with men and women who have been tasked with a very important function, securing the country, and given this information reflected in the presentation, I'm tempted just to pose a question that says, if we have to rate our security in a standard of 1 to 5, where do we stand? Because I think it's very important to respond to that question so that we know exactly where we stand. If we don't, I think we will be a country that will be bordering on serious security crisis situation. I think that that is the basis upon which I'm raising that question. The second one is related to SARS. I think on page 55, they talk about the budget pilferage. And then they say between January and June 2011, 3,469 budgets were affected. But I find this statement to be naked. It's only the bowl, there's no meat. I would have preferred something that said, between June to December of 2010, give a figure. So the figure you are giving us is incomparable. It indicates either a decline or an increase, not just a naked statement. For me, it doesn't make sense to me. And I think we can still do better by sort of going back, analyzing what has happened, where we are, whether we move forward or move backward, what needs to be done. I think that's the gist of my question. The third one, Chair, briefly, is on the SANDF, the shortfall that you're talking about. And I know there's no department that can actually say it's enough when we talk about money. Every time we will ask for more. But I thought it would be also important to talk about the in-house capacity to spend the money. Because I think it's important. And also to develop an attitude that says, let me make effective use of what I have. Let me make sure that what I have I use to the fullest so that I don't end up asking for more and sitting with all over at the end of the day. So I'm just saying it's important as we talk about money. We might not talk about money that we bring in, but the money that we cannot be able to spend. So that at least we can also help treasure in helping manage or steering the whole question of expenditure of the state. The last one is in relation to public works. Just to say that, and I think the report of public works was too much of a summary, I think, given the role that the department is actually supposed to be performing. But just to say that, moving forward, I think, in your infrastructure development program, you must take into account that there are new challenges which relate to climate change. So your infrastructure must be able to respond to those kind of challenges, but I think they are very important. In terms of illegal, but not illegal, immigration that my colleague spoke about, he said some people are illegal, but they are not illegal. My only attitude towards that arrangement is that I think Home Affairs must be required to make sure that every individual who is in this country must be legal. To the true meaning of the word legal. If you're not legal, you have to go outside there, sort out yourself, and come back in the country, be legal. I think that's the attitude that we have to take if we want to address. Because the more you have people you cannot account for, the more you have put a lot of pressure on your economic issues, and you're not going to be able to respond to the challenges that you face. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you,
Madam
Kulaban. Thank you, Chair. Chair, I received reports that various borderline bases were in a terrible, indeed disgraceful state of disrepair when they were handed back to the SANDF from the SAP. Please tell us which ministry paid for the renovations that were then necessary, how much it cost, and if anyone was arrested for the theft and destruction that was reported that had gone on under the SAP tenure. And then, at my request, the Auditor General did a full report on security at our borders 3 years ago, and on the 23rd of July 2008, that was released, and security was found to be woefully inadequate. I noticed this report was not referred to by a single presenter today. At that stage, there was a 71% undercapacity rate for land borders, 96% undercapacity rate for air borderlines and sea borderlines. In fact, the air borderline operations had no permanent staff. There are more than 300 small vessel launch sites and slipways that are not monitored by the police and sea borderline control units, and we don't even have, or at that stage didn't even have the ability to detect low-flying aircraft as used by drug smugglers and payload smugglers. And certainly there was no centrally collected and analyzed set of statistics in relation to borderline crimes, illegal foreigners, repatriated, illegal immigrants, criminal syndicates and the like. So basically there was no plan at all. I see this as a very, very dark period in SAC history. And now we see our farmers and farm workers are a threat on the borders. Their animals are smuggled out of the country. Since the decision was taken by Cabinet to now reverse their decision, put the SANDF back, do we have some sort of measurement that we can say, yes, there is an improvement, no, there isn't? How do we know, considering the fact that our borders have been so porous? I'm very concerned that the figures we've been shown here are simply, and it was mentioned a moment ago, simply one figure. How do you compare that to anything? If anyone came with a presentation like this to a portfolio committee, normally they would be asked to go back and redo it, because what are you comparing that to? It's no good just saying there's a figure without giving us something for the previous 2 years to say, yes, you're improving or not. So I want to know if that's measurable. The Auditor General also referred to endemic corruption at the border post. He said it was from the cleaning staff right up to the very top. Literally, they were accepting bribes for handing over documentation to illegal immigrants. And, you know, we've seen, especially in the light of the downgrading of the South African passport, what this has led to. And I want to know what has been put in place to deal with that as a result of the Auditor General's report. And finally, the National Police Commissioner admitted to the Police Portfolio Committee that the trains at our border ports were never searched. He said only the passengers who got ordered to check through with their passports were ever searched or had their goods searched, but the goods on the train were never, ever searched. We were absolutely shocked at that. He said he simply didn't have the stock. Now we hear about the counterfeit cigarettes, and they're hitting our national revenue, and have apparently destroyed up to a third of the legal South African tobacco business. You claimed 100 million rand of illegal cigarette seized, but again, from what? Is that good, bad, an improvement? Not? We don't know. As you well know, with that figure to compare this to, it's impossible to interrogate. And we're talking cigarettes packaged apparently mainly in China, smuggled across, sold here, and they contain poison. Not that cigarettes don't, but they kill people a lot quicker. So we need answers to that. And finally, I've heard that there are reports that tobacco is being grown just across our borders, smuggled across to South Africa and used to finance various terrorist organizations. Very worrying concern for me, and I'd like to know if the ministries here represented today are on top of this matter. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. So I will hand over the reins to my co-chair.
Chairperson, there have been a number of questions asked here now. I think we are going to want the answers to all these questions. We are going to be here late tonight. Perhaps, Chairperson, the questions relating to the challenges that are contained in the documents might require the departments to consider and apply their minds to that. And perhaps those questions should be, you should come back and consider and then reply in writing to those questions. And that perhaps will limit some of the answers that you expect now. Just on the answers that we expect now, Chair, a number of departments here now, okay, how to balance this, because some of the departments were given more questions to ask than others, and they might spend more time answering, and some of the honourable members might be disturbed that their questions haven't been answered. So I'm just wondering, if we can't allocate a certain amount of time to the various departments that are here, and to answer what you can and what you can't, to answer in writing. Honourable members, I don't know how you feel about that. I would suggest that there are at least six departments here. If we are going to allocate 10 minutes to each, it's going to take us an hour. and we are going to go into our lunch period. I'm just suggesting perhaps 5 minutes per department, and then if there is more time to see what further questions can be answered after that. That would be my recommendation, Chair. I think the message is clear that there is a concern that there is more work to be done, that there's further presentations, and that the honourable members want to be satisfied that this border management thing is really going to be coordinated properly. I think one of the disturbing factors is that we don't have NICOC here. Obviously, we wouldn't want all the intelligence jargon, but they are the ones that are going to keep this thing together. And perhaps next time we should consider bringing them along with also. So perhaps, honourable members, let's take a 5 minutes from each department. I think if they talk faster, I don't see the reason why they should not be able to talk faster. 5 minutes each department, and then we come back and see our following one.
Jefferson, can I just ask, I go along with the suggestion, but can we just put a time frame on when do we get the answers in writing? Because it's almost Christmas, you know, it's been just passed. I'm worried we don't get the answers. Can we just get the time frame on the answers?
Yes, Chair, we will take a proposal on that, and we will see if the proposal is suitable, and if not, we will engage on the proposal. Part of the answers, let me hear from them when we can expect that, and then we can decide whether that is plausible and desirable.
Thank you very much, Co-Chair. I mean, I've got about 8 pages of questions here. And I do agree with the Chair that we definitely not have enough time to exhaustively answer to all the questions, but more importantly, some of the questions are quite pointed, like, for example, what are the trends that these numbers indicate? We have to go back and be able to cultivate that answer more constructively, and we take the criticism well, Chair. And, as you have seen, coaches, what we tried to do was to be as honest as possible in trying to address the question that was posed to us. We got the invite, obviously, about a week or two back, and then we tried to coordinate as much as possible to make sure that when we come here, we do address honorable members' concerns. And when we came here, we were pretty clear that we might have to come back, because we have not had this kind of interaction. And now we understand where you're pitching it and what kind of responses are you expecting. And the other thing that I alluded to, Chair, in general, before every department comes back and answers their questions, is that we have, as the Interagency Clearing Forum, put forward a proposal to cabinet, which unfortunately is going into the next cabinet only next week, and our principals have not applied themselves and appraised that proposal. It's a proposal, Chair, that is trying to comprehensively come up with a sustainable, collaborative solution to the border management challenges that we are facing, while we are still working on establishing the border management agency, which in our delivery agreement you know, it's supposed to be fully functional by 2014. So we've put this proposal forward, and it will address, Chair, issues of, for example, you know, capacitating some of the structures like the NetJoint, coming up with a modernization forum that would address the lack of integration of systems and technologies, monitoring, integration, joint operations, integration, and focus areas, and also a budget, you know, a coordinated cluster budget process that would be sustainable. So some of these things are being addressed in a, you know, in a comprehensive manner in that cabinet memorandum that has gone to our principals. The second part of my general question, Chair, is that
we work as individual departments, and we try as hard as possible to make sure that we coordinate, because there is not one department amongst us here that would be able to address this thing without coordinating with the rest of the others. It takes a lot of legislation. For example, from a SARS perspective, we have 42 pieces of legislation that we are administering just on the customs side. And in order to be able to map a new process, come up with a new policy, it takes a lot of legal architecture to be able to come up with a process that would address each and everything. But we do some. And what we were trying to say today, Chair, and demonstrate was, we are aware of the challenges. We're working together to address them. And our country is vast. And unfortunately, the other thing here is, you know, we don't have the social, the security agency here today. As you saw in the presentation, they were supposed to be here. And then they pulled out because, you know, they're accountable to the Joint Intelligence Agency. And the risk assessment report that the Honorable Twyla was referring to is done by the social, by the security agency. And it would have been quite good to have that context. You know, we intended to first present to you, you know, the security and the risk issues that we are facing at the border, and then hopefully each one of our agencies would be able to say that is the part that we are addressing, you know, in each one. But because the intelligence report work their own way, unfortunately we have been deprived of that, that possibility. But there is a risk assessment, a much newer one than the one that the Honorable Fela was referring to, and it also forms part of the solutioning that we have put through to Cabinet. So all these issues have been looked at, and Chair, there are also policy and political decisions that need to be made, as we referred to. You know, how much fences do we want to raise? How much security do we want to shut out this country, you know, away? As if it was the old apartheid, where no movement of people in Southern Africa should happen. What is the impact on international relationships of those issues? We have frontier parks, say, where there are no borders. And those frontier parks have been facilitated particularly to make sure that our biodiversity in Africa prospers. And it has some environmental impact if you put a fence, you know, amongst them. And it also has obvious ecological and economic implications. So there are all those decisions that in the process of doing these things, we need direction. We are just bureaucrats. We are very good at implementing decisions. And then we hope that once we are at the point where we have direction from a policy point of view, we should be just against whether we have implemented what our principles have directed us. So, Chair, let me then give a chance to DHA and the others from a SARS perspective. Chair, I'll have to sit down, and I hope my colleagues have, you know, have noted the questions. So I just wanted to introduce that and put that context, Chair. And then, Gigi?
Just 1 minute.
Presenter says that the State Security Agency were going to join them today to present the risk assessment. In your view, there was in presenting that risk assessment, there would have been no threat to your national security, which would certainly not have been compromised. My question to you is then, who prevented them presenting this morning?
Honourable Member, that's not a point of order. We will find out why the State Security Agency. Point of order?
No, Chairperson, I want to request to you that we don't interrupt the presenters as they give us their answers.
We're running out of time on the members. Can we hear from Setna? Home Affairs. You want Home Affairs?
Okay. Five
minutes, Home Affairs.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. 5 minutes. Chair, our view
There's a saying which says, if you know your enemy, then it would be better to fight. I think where we are aware of our wife. That we are aware of them, there is a hope to resolve them. That's what we are. And Chair, as a department, is to say that's why we are engaged in a process of reviewing the whole point around immigration. So that all these issues, we can be able to deal with them in a systematic process, and also not creating the impression that South Africa now must be a closed country. That's why we're putting the history of this country, which all of us who are aware of. So we need to still maintain that, but to the benefit of the country. Also, South Africa has signed various conventions, UN, AU, and also we have signed them. So we want to participate in those, however, in a manner that it must benefit the citizens of this country. Chair, because of the time, we're not able now to take each one and say, this is the challenge, what we will do, but in the report which we submit, we'll be able to do it. But there are few which I think I just want to respond to. What are we doing? I think that is very important to address this issue. Let's take example the amendment which was put on chair. You know, in South Africa currently, people they get dual citizenship of which those countries are not given to us. If you go to Lesotho, Lesotho does not give you a dual citizenship. But in South Africa, we are given Basotho a dual citizenship which you cannot get into that country. That is the problem which you need to address and say, at what level do you give somebody a dual citizenship? Which brings this issue of the pensions which are talking about. And there were specific dispensations which were given as Honorable Maziel was quoting them. To say prior 1994, those processes were open, but people did not participate. They were reluctant to take those citizenship at that time. But now, they want to come back and say, no, I'm still this thing open. But what is important for us is that the economy of this country is just this size. It cannot carry more than what it has. So that's why it is important for us to look at this issue. Well, the issue of corruption. Corruption is something which is across, but what have we done specifically as a department? What I was mentioning today and today. If now you steal somebody's ID and you change your face, if you go to our banks before, you can transact. But now today the minister is launching a verification process between the banks and ourselves. You can change that face, it's fine, but you can't change your fingerprint. So we will be able now to say you cannot utilize that ID for any other thing. So there are those processes which are put in place. In Home Affairs now you no longer go there, just punch your password. You have to use your fingerprint and that. Now it traces the transaction up to the end. That's why we have got these successes which we're having even when you go to the court to prove who has done what. So, Chair, I think we will be able to come back, but I think what is important for me is to say, as departments, we really want to make that IACF a reality, so that we work together, even when we come, because for some of this, I cannot do it by myself. I need to be sure that SAF has got the same capability as what I was putting in the table at the Department of Home Affairs. So, Chair, that's what I say, we will respond. Unfortunately, time is against me.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Honourable Member. I will also try to take some of the questions which we have answered in our disclosure, and those which we don't have will respond in writing accordingly. Firstly, to begin with, who is responsible for refurbishing and reconstructing those borderline bases which are dilapidated at this stage before they are handed over to the CFM? The requirement is that the current department which is occupying a particular government building before they hand it over back to Public Works, so that Public Works must reallocate to another department. That occupying department, it is its responsibility to ensure that we hand over the accommodation or the premises at the status which we find it in before we take occupation on that. Coming to the issue of the airstrip, yes, currently we don't have the figure, but what we know, there are many and there are mushrooming every day, those airstrips. We can go back and try to locate or to provide the honorable members in the House with the exact location of those airstrips and the number thereof. But even though the number, it won't be accurate because of those airstrips are mushrooming every day. And we know that this is a challenge which we are facing with. With regard to the challenges which the SAPS have faced,
there is a problem. I don't get the feeling that FAFSA is answering the question. So we don't want to intervene, but at the same time, FAFSA is not answering the question. Even on the first one, which they have there, then, for us, the issue is not how many actors. The question is, you said they are managed by local police stations. My question is, how practical is that? Because some of them are far away from any police station. That's the question.
Madam Chair, I was answering to the question which was also asked by the honourable member. She wanted to know how many districts we have and where exactly are located. That is the answer which I was giving.
Coming to the development is correct. Honourable member, the assurance we have got that questions that were not answered here will be answered in writing, and when we give them the report, if a question has not been answered in the report, we request that the question be answered. They have assured us that they have written down all these things, so those of you that find your questions are not answered directly, please, that we are trying to manage the time factor here. But I'm sure that we won't get the answers in writing. It doesn't come here. Proceed.
Thank you. With regard to the challenges which we have raised in our presentation, these are not the new challenges. These are the old challenges. We know about it, and we've spoken much about these challenges in different forums. Unfortunately, we didn't brief this House or the Police Portfolio Committee when we appeared previously about these challenges. We agree on that one. These challenges is the ones which gave rise that we went to our minister and request that we need to engage the defense to ensure that the defense will take over the borderline function from us. Because we as the police, we have realized that this job is too big for us. And coupled that answer with the number of police officers we have on those particular border lines, which honorable member said, is that correct? Yes, it is not correct. It is not sufficient we have 27 members patrolling 68 kilometers. And that is why we call upon that we need to strengthen the hands of the defense force so that they quickly take over that responsibility. From the police side to patrol that area, definitely we are not doing justice to this country. The issue of the budget, yes, it is true, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, that the budget, when we take responsibility to the defense, it has also affected our budget. But again, the police, they are also having other priorities, whereby when we take this function to the defense, we also focus on other responsibilities like your rural safety, like strengthening the border post, because the border post also, we didn't have sufficient resources to can capacities or heightened security in those border posts. So we have rechanneled our resources, we have rechanneled our budget to those areas which we identified that they need some attention from our part. Madam Chair, those few questions which I have at my disposal now, and the rest will ensure that we respond in writing.
The defense.
Thank you, Chair. I support the view that the time is too small to answer all the questions satisfactorily. Those that are not answered can be in writing answered in full. I just want to mention the fact that maybe just to start with the question of the Honorable David Maynard of the Borderline Security in terms of the companies deployed. First and foremost, our operations must be guided by intelligence. I don't think at any time South Africa, with the resources as little as we have, will have every airplane of the Air Force, every ship of the Navy, every soldier, whatever the soldier that we want to allocate. So the resources that we have in the South African National Defense Force, we think must be used to the maximum, including use of technology in terms of the sensor. So just to touch on quickly the maritime border, I'm just looking at my time as well. We do have as a defense force the responsibility to patrol the borders. We do have a responsibility to help the infiltration of illegals, with some of them come through the sea into neighboring states, then eventually into South Africa. I think the deployment of our ship in the Mozambican Channel is also assisting directly in the challenges that we have around the sea smuggling and sea patrol. But then we also have agreement with our neighboring countries, as in terms of bilateral, to speaking to them from a defense to defense point of view, to synchronize patrols, that patrols can access and be synchronized from both sides of the border, so that we become effective. But in terms of the companies that are deployed, right now we have seven. And we gave a picture of a slide that tells us some of the other commitments of the defense that we have outside the border. We have close to, close to 10 companies that are deployed both in Sudan and the DRC, so in the Central African Republic on a bilateral. But then the companies that we must use for border safeguarding within our borders are not there. We are building them up. We are seven now, four by the end of the 12-13, and as I gave the statistics. But then the use of technology, as I've mentioned, is critical, as in terms of the sensors, which could cover up to one sensor covering a significant distance that a soldier patrolling on foot might not be able to do. I think at the end of the day, the companies, according to the current plan, we will have by the end of our deployment, I think in 2014, we will have 22 companies. Of course, we continue to reassess with all of the other departments being involved, especially intelligence, as I've mentioned, where gaps are, and we continue to replan and we continue to reorganize. But the current plan now is that by the end of 2014, or phase four, as I've mentioned it, there will be 22 companies on the ground. And then I still have 2 minutes left. That if I don't have it, then I think the rest of what I didn't answer might have to come in writing in full appreciation. But the other 2 minutes I thought maybe I could give to my colleague, if the chair has 10 minutes.
Are you asking for injury time, sir?
I thought I still have 2 minutes.
You can have 2 minutes.
Okay.
Honourable Chair, regarding the borderline fence, there's 200 kilometres of the original electric fence. It was not maintained. We're busy now with DPW to do a contract to put in place to do the maintenance. For this financial year, we have allocated $4 million for de-weeding of the fence and to repair that. And regarding the weapons shop, it's mainly small weapons, AK-47s and handheld guns, regarding your question. And then we must remember that every foreigner or illegal person that are captured or any weapon found or any contraband, immediately that case is recognized as a crime scene. So the police are called in, they do the total and proper investigation, and that, then the rest of the people are handed over to the police, and then the police take the matter. So we must go through according to law with all the various procedures. Regarding the budget shortfall, the policy proposal was submitted 3 months ago. We will be able to spend that, and it's not all for operations. We must pay the army to take in new troops to train them. We had to buy vehicles, we had to buy radios, we had to acquire air surveillance equipment and land surveillance equipment. So in principle, yes, it's a huge amount, but spread it over the whole of the department, yes, we will be able to spend that, depending when we get it in and what period in the financial. I think to conclude, the biggest challenge is that we're not at war. And we had to develop this appropriate balance between have credible deterrence and simultaneously have appropriate capabilities to address these challenges. Because what we discuss here today is not war-related. And how do you develop and maintain a defense force when you're not at war and the demand now is not war demand? I'm not need bombs and missiles to protect my borders, but I have a defense force. The peacekeeping operations in Africa don't necessarily demand conventional equipment. Same with the police. And this is the challenge you have with the defense force in, when they're not at war. Because it's now guns for butter. And you have to manage that very appropriately. So that's a big challenge we have got. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. From a first perspective, there are about 6 questions, Chair. The first one was on scanning. Why are we not scanning 100% of all the goods that come into the country? Chair, after 9/11 in the U.S., the U.S. then went to the World Customs Organization and demanded that each and every import into the U.S. must be scanned in case one container, you know, has a Bin Laden inside it. So each and every piece of equipment that went into the U.S., they demanded that it be scanned. And there was a huge eruption at the WCO that you will gridlock the movement of goods around the world if at any stage you want to start scanning each and every piece of import that comes to our country. It's impossible, Chair, to scan 100%. It doesn't happen anywhere, and it will never happen anywhere. So what it means is, you have to understand the risk. You need to have the source of information that informs your targets and your profiling. And we use a lot of databases, Chair. So one of the databases that we do, for example, in choosing the targets that we go after, for example, in clothing and textile, is we have a valuation database which informs us and say a kilogram of jeans, for example. The other day, to give you an example, Chair, we stopped a container, a few containers that contains kilograms of jeans, which were valued at 14 cents a kilogram of jeans. You can understand that there is no way that you can have a jean that costs you 14 cents. So if you have a valuation database, it will tell you around the world a jean with the following textile material and so on, composition, is so much. So if you have a declaration of any container that comes into your country, you have a risk rule that says if it's below the following valuation price, then you stop the particular container. At the present moment, Chair, we inspect about 1.5% of goods that come into our country. That's the capacity that we have. I pointed out, Chair, that it takes close to 5 hours to unpack one container. So you better be sure that the needle that you have, you really point it to the most effective route. So we try at all stages to use business rules, intelligence, and many other sources of information, best party, to try and calibrate our rules so that we are able to target the most risky of the imports that we have. Chair, the next question was around the size of the illicit economy. The cigarette manufacturers, represented by the tobacco industry of South Africa, have their own estimate of how big the illicit economy is when it comes to cigarettes. Crime intelligence, which sits in our structure, have a way of estimating, you know, all other illegal goods, like illegal mining, like many other things, copper wire, and so on. So it's a very difficult number to get to. We're struggling in our country already from a South tax perspective to say, what is the compliance gap? What is the tax gap in our country? What we have are generalities to say, in a developing country, the illicit economy, you know, can vary from 15% to 35% in general. Where ours is, Chair, I definitely am not in a position to be able to give you any correct figures. We'll try and come back, like the rest of our other sister department, to try and calibrate and give you a better answer on that one. Chair, the BMA, the question that was asked by the honorable member, NICOG, as the chair has said it clearly, are tasked with the responsibility to establish and coordinate, you know, the efforts that we are making in establishing the BMA. And as I mentioned, in our delivery agreement with the president, the BMA is supposed to come into force by 2014. On the one-stop border, from Honorable D.A. George, on whether we're still going to have a joint meeting to discuss the implication of the one-stop border post between South Africa and Mozambique. Yes, of course, we're going to do that. There's a need for us to be able to do that because the legislation is in front of Cabinet, and it's in front of Parliament through the Standing Committee on Finance. And hopefully that joint meeting of committees will take place sooner than later. And that's why we don't have all the details in this one. And so I think I answered the issues on targeting and profile. Thank you very much. And then DPW, if they can come and check. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. There were two questions for Public Works as well as two very welcome comments. The first on climate change, and we give the assurance that we will factor that into our building processes. The second on the brevity report. We ensure a comprehensive report will be submitted through along with the rest of the department. With your permission, I'll field the first question on the accommodation backlog, and my colleague, Mr. Makwari, for the Director of Projects working on the key border post project, will respond on the issue of the contract. Members, I'm very pleased to announce that to state that the department has 102 projects to the value of 310 million rand in the current financial year listed on its work control system. 33 are in the design stage, 4 are with final preparation for tender documents, 1 is in the pre-site handover stage, 34 are under construction, 11 practical completion, and 19 in final delivery. These totals exclude a number which I will provide in the report, for which funds are being sorted in early pre-feasibility stages. It has to do with the clearance and allocation of funds, the final determination of the need, as well as the clarification and clearance of the site for those projects. Thank you.
Can I just ask a question, sir? Are the projects you're referring to related to what we are discussing here, or you're talking about all projects?
Honourable Member, these are border post DCOCC projects. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. With regard to the penalties law, let me indicate to the members that GB's Department of Public Works is mainly using two forms of contracts. One being GBCC for building contracts, the other one being GCC for contracts leading to engineering work, and they all have penalty provision in them. For non-compliance of the contractor, what normally contractually is supposed to happen is if the contractor is underperforming or not complying to specification, we are expected to put out that specific contractor on NORA for a period of about 10 days. If there's no improvement, we review the contract otherwise. If there is any improvement, we just proceed with the project until it's completed. But in most cases, what happens, the contractor that meets targeted completion date, we then impose penalties. In both forms of contract, there is provision, and the contractor is liable for any defects that may arise after practical completion. For JBTC form of contract, the contractor remains responsible for a period of 3 months, and for GCC remains responsible for a period of 12 months. That's how we are monitoring the non-compliance part. Thank you.
Treasury?
Yeah, the President. According to the 2011 medium-term expenditure framework, no less than 3.6 billion in 2011-12, 3.8 billion in 2012-13, and 4 billion in 2013-14 has been allocated for various border management related activities. So these are some of the activities that we have brought together to arrive at a consolidated figure. The exercise of consolidation is still going on. So we're going to update these figures in the coming days and coming weeks to give you a better picture. We're still getting figures from some of the departments that work at the borders. Okay, so in other words, there is money that has been allocated for border management. It's not that there is nothing. There is some money that has been allocated. The question is, if there is a need for additional funding, okay, how do we meet that requirement within the constrained fiscal environment that we're functioning? Now, there are very obvious places where one looks for money. Efficiency says if there are programs that are not spending efficiently, then I'm sure you yourself would advise that we use that money elsewhere where it will be used much more efficiently. If money is being underspent by a department, we identify those funds and use that money elsewhere. These are very natural, I think very obvious ways of dealing with budget constraints in our environment.
Just before we get an indication of the report, who's going to take the responsibility of evaluating the damages to the building? There was a question there. Would you like you to come back and say it wasn't your problem? Is somebody going to take responsibility amongst you for doing the evaluation on the damages to the building?
Okay.
But you thought you come back on. Somebody will. Then the report. Honourable members, 7 days, 14 days. Can we hear?
Yes. Yes, I think BPW is committing to coming up with the report. The honourable members are suggesting 7 days. I'm not sure if they are committing themselves to that.
We are talking about a consolidated report now. We don't want individual reports. I think it should be a consolidated report where everybody. So, question on that report. 7 days, 14 days.
There's a serious challenge. As I mentioned earlier, there's a proposal that we have put forward to cabinet. which answers most of the issues, because we have comprehensively addressed some of these issues. And cabinet, as you know, because of COP17, are going into research this year much more earlier. So as soon as we have the reply from cabinet in terms of which whether they have embraced all the suggestions that we have put forward, we'll definitely come back and coordinate all our answers via the same structure that coordinated for this meeting, which is the Interagency Clearing Forum. So, Chair, I can't come, I would say, dependent on, this thing being tabled in the next cabinet, then we'll definitely come back as soon as possible with a much more considered answer. Then to rush and come up with a 7 days answer that would still tell you the same thing, that, we haven't considered each and every element of it. So I'm not kicking for that, Chair, I'm just practically saying, this is the constraining thing that is standing between us and your answer.
An indefinite response on members. I would say that in 7 days' time, we need to get in writing what the position is. Because I don't think the honourable members would be satisfied that you leave us indefinitely and that the responses lie hands of cabinet. Had there been sufficient time, the honourable member expected you to respond, irrespective of whether cabinet was dealing with the matter or not. But I think we need by next week to get an indication what your position is. So we give you 7 days in which you would address the chair there what the position is. If the position is unsatisfactory, I think then the committees will have to take a decision on that and perhaps it's the act of cabinet. Honourable Chair of Police, can you take over, please?
Thank you very much. We do hope that we'll get answers. However, the Chairperson of Defence will make closing remarks, but just on our side, I just want to thank you for this interaction and for me. There are many unanswered questions and many worrying challenges, and I think this was important a meeting to have, and we want to thank you for being here. However, we probably will have to sit down and consider the way forward, the best way forward. I see this affecting quite a number of things that are happening within the country, be it economy, be it safety, security, and so on, be it our budget, be it everything. Commissioner, I am not very sure as to whether sitting here, I understand exactly as to how is this whole thing related to borderland security coordinated. And I'm talking about effective, efficient, coordination. That's what I think is still lacking as I am listening carefully to your presentation, start saying that, and even the budget, that sitting here we're not getting an answer that says for this financial budget, SAP had this much for this responsibility, defense this much for this, and together this is how we planned as to how we're going to utilize or spend that budget. Whether it is, SAPs remain accountable, but we are addressing this as our priority together in border post whatever security. I think that is what one is not getting, that integration and comprehensive approach that talks to the budget, that might not be adequate. However, that all of you seated, you know that SAPs has so much, defense has so much, and so on and so forth. That's what I personally am not getting in your presentation, and probably that is why the treasurer person is still telling us that he's going to get information from other departments. And I can't understand as to how it is happening that you do not know as to how much is Department of Health having that is related to this, how much is there, so that this is the pool of money, even if it is handled by different departments. That is my worry, which probably
said to me, maybe there isn't that effective coordination that should take us forward in ensuring that we manage this very well. Chairperson, thank you very much from myself. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Even if exactly what you said is what I was going to say. When we started the meeting, the purpose of the meeting was clearly stated. The budget, the role and accountability, time frames and so on. I wouldn't be very sure whether all of that was dealt with. But at least one must appreciate that the department that presented and the agencies, they seem to know pretty well what, or rather they are aware of what they seem, the challenges that they face. I'm not very sure when I was listening or when we talk about challenges. Are they challenges or are they problems? Or is the term challenges replacing problems? I tend to hear problems that exist in this area that we are dealing with. The solution to the problem, as it was said, was an integrated system is needed in order to deal with this problem. What are the problems that we have in order to fulfill them? One of my colleagues here said that the question of time frames didn't come out very clearly. There was thinking about the bush, about time frames. I think in the responses that we're going to get, let's clearly get the time frame or what are we talking about here. And the presentation by the Home Affairs clearly indicates that in this area either we need to amend some law or we need to come up with new laws that will deal with this problem. Because the acts that we have are definitely not sufficient to deal with this situation. Even the examples that were given, we dealt with the administrative part of this problem. We didn't get into a problem I don't know whether I must call it political. Problems like, if I was to give an example, nowadays if you move from Messina until Cape Town, every car park you will get, foreigners are responsible for the car park. From Messina to the Cape. If you get into the rest of it, from Messina to the Cape, you will get waiters there would be for it. We didn't approach the meeting along those lines. We were sort of talking about budget and so on. But you get to, we no more have the traditional corner shop. And if you don't have the traditional corner shop, it means it changes the culture of the village itself. You can't go there and borrow a packet of sugar and wait for the father to come back in order to pay. It's totally different. From Messina to the Cape. Every village, all those corner shops no more exist. The death of the corner shop. Crime. People whom we don't have fingerprints are going around committing crimes and it's difficult to trace. All I'm saying is we dealt with this, but not along those lines. We talked about private security companies. If you have a
cyber security company. At the point of the entry into this country, what are we actually doing? The private security company at the airport, at the border, in prison, or even a private prison, wouldn't it be easy to bribe a private security company for? All in all, what I'm saying is, anyway, we see somebody talked about NICOC and so on. In the answers that we'll be expecting, if you could add on some of those things. Or maybe next time when we deal with this problem, let's approach it not only administratively, maybe even socially and politically, in order to be able to address it. And I would put forward a suggestion that we need more time than 2 days, 3 days to deal specifically with this problem. I would like to thank you, Chairperson. Over to you.
Thank you very much. And this meeting stands adjourned.